This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 85,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
All right, y'all, it's about to happen. Weekend confirmed, the podcast right here. ShaqNews.com.
Eat your Wheaties this morning.
I know. It's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I've got all kinds of exciting stuff to share with you.
This time, sans alcohol.
Yeah, well, yeah, for now. We could always go out at the break and get something. So don't make us do that, since we might jeopardize the entire future of video game industry in one fell podcast. In 2 hours, we could do that. Or we could also do something like talk about the Grand Theft Auto 5 trailer, Uncharted 3, and a whole host of other stuff that we've got coming up today. Jeff Cannata is here with me.
With two N's and one T, of course.
And then we have two fantastic representatives of development community, including Mr. James Stevenson from Insomniac Studios.
Returning champion.
Thank you. Thank you. I have my spinner belt.
Also now a part of the college football podcasting scene.
Yeah, you know.
So what's that all about?
Just like broadening my horizons a little bit, writing about the Huskers and college football in general. So
if they want to catch up with you on the Huskers or college football, wagering tip.
I always tweet a lot on my Twitter, which is James Stevenson, Stevenson. And then I also write for HuskerLocker.com, and you can catch me a few times a week there.
He's a big Nebraska fan, in case you didn't know.
Husker Locker.
That's
got a nice ring to it. I like that.
Yeah, you like that?
Is that where we keep the creepy Jeff Cage?
Stop.
All right, and between them is the lovely Miss Ariel Angelotti, here all the way from Kyoto, Japan, and Q Games.
Welcome.
Great to be here. Also, last name, 1N2Ts.
Hey-o.
Ooh.
Hey.
She's the yang to my yin.
Sweet. So you can imagine that we're also going to talk about All for One and probably some side-scroller, considering three of the four people at the table are in the credits for side-scroller.
How cool is that?
It is kind of cool. Have you listened to it yet?
I haven't. Because I need to beat the game in order to do that, right?
Yeah.
I haven't done that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have not done that.
You should definitely do that. In case you don't know what we're talking about, Jeff and I do a little read of some VO at the end of Science Show.
It's
a reward for your finishing it.
Somebody, actually a couple of people on Twitter sent me a message saying, is that your voice at the end?
I know, me too.
I was like, oh, that's cool. Awesome. I'm recognizable in that
I had the added benefit of co-oping it with Ariel last night. And the only, the good part was we got to the end. The bad part was would you stop dying? And it wasn't me that was saying that. I'm just going to go ahead and cop to that right
now. I'm
going
to try not to say anything mean about Garnet's skills.
So what you're saying is you're the pixel and he's the junk.
Oh, definitely, for sure. I got a lot of pixels.
That's pretty good,
here.
Actually.
And I got a lot of junk.
Wow. He just went there. He totally just went there. He's red in the face right now, by the way. Well, you guys aren't seeing this, but he's red.
Anyway, so moving right along, something that didn't make anyone red in the face, Grand Theft Auto 5 had this massive trailer debut. Servers everywhere were hammered as everyone across the internet tried to get it posted on their site so that they could get your eyeballs to watch this thing. Did anyone ever notice, was it actually 1 minute and 4 seconds? Since that was like... You remember there's like prominent, it's going to be 1 minute and 4 seconds. The silliest review.
I don't know. I thought it was longer than that, actually.
It was pretty long.
Yeah.
I lost track of time while I was watching it.
I remember that my first time, I kept timing out at like 58 seconds, and there was a good 30 seconds after that. So I know it was longer than that.
Oh, yeah. We were recording a bonus round, which will be going up on Game Trailers over November. And the first segment we did was we were discussing this thing. We were like trying to watch it because like our shoot was right in the middle of it, and it kept like loading. It would like load like a little bit, and we were like, god damn it, is it gonna load the rest of the thing? I'm like, don't you guys run a video service? Can't you get this shit working?
Yeah,
god. So what do we think?
It's pretty. It's very pretty.
I already have a pre-order
already. Really? I mean, are you being serious, or are you just saying that?
Well, if you pre-ordered on Amazon, right?
Is it up for pre-order on Amazon? It probably is.
It probably is. I don't know. But
you're saying you're sold.
But you were sold by the title of the game.
Right, yeah. You really could have just put a trailer like and said like GTA 5, Los Santos.
It's going to be on sale
Rockstar
at some point.
Yeah, it's coming out next year, whenever And here you go. And I'll be like, yes, thank you. We'll take this and I will play it. But the trailer didn't dissuade me at all. It made me even more excited, I think.
Yeah, I was also not dissuaded. I was not underwhelmed by it. I just wasn't overwhelmed by it either. I wasn't blown away. It looks very pretty. I'm excited we're back in, you know, basically right out our window of the West Coast, California, which is an exciting thing to see in this new version of the engine that is really very has a lot of detail, and a lot of detail is evident in the trailer, and that's exciting. But I was kind of hoping there would be something really unexpected and genre pushing forward.
Like what?
To it. Well, we talked about a lot of things.
Space Station Grand Theft Auto?
Who knows? I was hoping to be surprised. I wasn't surprised, but that's okay. I'm still excited.
It'll be interesting. Do you think there's going to be new? I mean, do you think there's going to be something new? Is there going to be a new hook somewhere?
I think there'll absolutely
be something
new.
They keep hinting at it.
But what will that something new be? That's the question. So, look, I mean, here's the first thing that stands out to me is that everybody, not everybody, but a preponderance of people that I've spoken with, and I haven't had a chance to read a lot of internet commentary, but a lot of people I've spoken to have expressed this sort of, and they immediately say, I'm not underwhelmed. And then they have that same sort of sentiment, like you said, but it didn't blow me away, or I'm not overwhelmed, or I'm not crazy about it. And yet, if you look around, like, everybody and their brother is like sharing it on their Facebook and talking about it in forums. And so,
well, this is a major franchise.
This I didn't get blown away thing, I think, is kind of people trying to say, well, I'm so cool that, you know, I didn't get blown away. Yeah, it is pretty cool. Yeah. But I'm so cool that, you know, it's not that cool.
Well, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's not cool.
You are kind of
joking.
Pretty
much
sometimes.
It is the cool in video games. Grand Theft Auto franchise is right. What video game cool is.
Right. It's the thing, you know, your friends play it, so they'd actually be interested in this video game thing you're going to post on your wall instead of be like, God, do you have to post so many video game things on your wall all the time?
Yeah.
Like, this is the one where your friends, that like, or your grandma or your cousin or whatever, to be like, yeah, I'll actually watch that. Or the guys that play Modern Warfare, this is the game trailer they will actually go watch.
You don't think your grandmother's watching this?
My grandma's calling me on the phone.
She's like, did you see that new Grand Theft Auto 5 trailer?
Check it out.
Boy, son, that thing's hot.
I like how, because Garnet's from Texas, everyone's grandma is from Texas.
Yeah. Okay.
I just saw a post about it on the Face Place. It's great. It's great.
I'll let you know both of my grandmas are on Facebook and right on my wall.
Which is scary for a whole other.
I know.
Whole other realm of scariness.
Wait, so I'm the only one who's coming at this from the point of view of not really caring about the GTA series.
Yeah, you are probably the only person in the world who doesn't care about GTA.
I know I'm not the only person in the world. I know that's a fact. But
well, Garnet's
I know
grandma
I'm in the
loves
minority.
It.
I know I'm in the minority.
Why don't you care about Grand Theft Auto?
I get bored with it really easily.
I didn't finish 4, and it's because I completely lost interest. And some of the mechanics got in the way. I know they fixed a lot of that stuff, but I do not like GTA as much as I like Red Dead, as much as I like LA Noir, as much as I like where they've gone as a publisher, you know, away from that series. I get a little weary of that milieu and the sort of tone of it, and some of the missions can be a little uninteresting to me. And I did not have that problem with Red Dead
Mexico.
Yeah, I
you didn't get weary in Mexico.
Way to keep it real, brother.
I didn't. I everybody says that, but I didn't.
You didn't have a problem with Mexico.
I didn't. I pushed through, I guess. But I don't know.
I had to work pretty hard to get through Mexico.
What I'm saying is, I understand Ariel's sentiment, and that the series as a whole definitely it always represents a major release, and it's a big, interesting world, and there are very few companies that produce products like Rockstar does, in the sense that this is a tentpole release. This is going to have a very robust game world. It's going to have a really detailed storyline. It's going to be worth looking at. But as far as something that's really going to maybe blow me out of the water, it might not be. It might not be. And it's not because I'm too cool for school. It's because...
Not that he's not too cool for school, but that's not the reason it's in play here.
I am appropriately cool for the school that I'm going to. I am just the right amount of
School not too cool. much, not too little. Yes. Just right.
Exactly.
You're not big man on campus, but you are a man on campus.
I'm the baby bear porridge of cool for school.
You know what? When you get promoted to member on NeoGAF, that is now your NeoGAF handle right underneath there. You know you have that? That's
we'll make
it.
Sure that happens.
We're going to make sure that happens. We'll make sure that happens for sure, because that's a good one. That's a good one. You pulled your own quote there.
Anyway.
So yeah, they're headed Uncharted. Back. They're headed back to the city of Los Santos. The surrounding hills, countryside, beaches. They say it's the largest and most ambitious Rockstar game yet. So,
well, see, that's I'm interested to see how it goes too. Because I mean, you obviously saw like the Palm Desert area, so Palm Springs.
Yeah,
you saw
looks like Napa almost.
I wonder if that's more like Santa Barbara. Yeah. Like, so you get Malibu, you get Santa Barbara. Maybe it looks like maybe like a Big Bear type area could probably be in there. And then you saw Long Beach. So it seems like. It doesn't seem like San Francisco, like, because San Andreas had, what, San Francisco and Vegas, right?
Yes.
It doesn't seem like they're going to go that far, but they're going to be really hyper-detailed in a very large
dense.
Area all the way from the desert to the coast, which could be really, really cool. There's a lot of interesting
and
opportunities.
We got jet skis and jets and...
The jet.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the callback at the very close with the Learjet coming into the city of how many people spent time flying planes into the city in San Andreas. That was like a huge deal after you got up to the airbase. I mean, that was like a big deal. Everyone's like, I gotta get the Harrier. Always had fun with that. So that was a big callback there. And the next question I have, though, is about the – and you said it looks beautiful. So one of the things that struck me right off the bat is, you know, it opens with that scene. And granted, obviously, living in Santa Monica, that specifically struck me. But that lifeguard – shack like I could almost like walk out onto the boardwalk and go, I know exactly where that one is. And it was funny, you know, this is you know, there were a lot of analysis videos put up. The one that we did specifically because of, you know, being here in LA, is we had Jeff Mattis, who's lived here a long time, go through and look at the areas, and it's amazing. It was really amazing to him how many of the places in the trailer were direct lifts out of Los Angeles. And it's always been a stylized sort of thing, but I mean, this time they're going obviously for a very gritty, very much more realistic approach than they've done before. And I'm curious how that's going to work for them. I've always thought that part of their appeal was in their stylized approach.
Well, didn't 4 do that with New York, basically?
4 was pretty close.
It was pretty close, but I feel like they still had a degree of style to it. You know, they still had that's a good question. I mean, it still looked like a video game with a video game art style, if that
really?
Makes sense.
I don't know. I didn't get that impression from 4. I felt 4 was the most sort of... you know, realistic take on...
It was definitely the most realistic take. It was definitely, you know, after Vice City and all that kind of stuff, way different than that. Did you play Ariel, I'm assuming you didn't, since you didn't like the game.
I did not.
Did either of you play the add-on packs?
No, I played the first one forever. I really wanted to play them too, but I just never got around to playing either of them.
Yeah, I've heard such good things about Gay Tony, I never played it. I did play, what was the biker one?
Lost in the Damned?
Yeah,
or
I did play that. No,
not Lost in the Damned. It was some...
Something like that.
It was something like that, though.
Or terrible for not remembering, but...
So both of those exhibited improved storytelling, better character and narrative design, better campaign design. I think that's kind of the baseline. So then the question is, you know, how are they going to do this big thing that they're going to change? Because the quote that Sam Houser, founder of Rockstar Games, gave about the trailer was that Grand Theft Auto V is another radical reinvention of the Grand Theft Auto universe. We're incredibly excited to share our new vision with our fans. Okay. What we saw, all of us are like, that was not a radical reinvention.
Well, maybe there's more to it than what we saw.
And you know there's going to be. Yeah. I mean, there always is more than what they show. They're not going to tip their hat entirely. So,
you know, I mean, that showed us their franchise, you know, the DNA of their franchise. You know, the big open world city, the crime, the vehicles, the, you know, they showed, hey, okay, all the things you love are there. And I'm hoping, like, the next stuff is, here's what's radically new and is going to make you really excited about this.
That's
condition.
What I think.
And
so they talk a lot about, you know, reinventing things and the importance of open world. And I think that if you look at 4, one of the misses or arguable misses of it was multiplayer, because multiplayer was cool and everyone thought they were going to really love it. And I remember like me and Chow and some other folks getting together, you know, for like a 2 or 3 week period, like where we were hot on it. But all we were doing was like gathering up as many people as we could, as much weaponry as we could, and then going for 5 stars and seeing how long we could hold out against the police. And, you know, we didn't play like the cops and robbers or, you know, that all those other modes. We didn't really play them that much. We just sort of fiddle fucked around. And it seemed like many multiplayer games do, it lost its momentum very quickly, and because, you know, it's a third-person shooter and people just go back to what they're... I mean, obviously, probably even the Call of Duty effect has something to do with that. But what if... What if, since you're interested in like running around this urban environment and playing the city and it's supposed to be a live city, what if they like sort of borrowed a little page from maybe like Dark Souls and had... You know,
I think that's a more interesting take, but...
Had a shard system where, to a degree, people within the world that you're playing might be populated by real characters, but anonymously, and then have it set to where, like, maybe there's still some sort of, like, you know, ability to grief people or help them, but you use that same sort of, you know, make it really hard for someone to come into your game and grief you, and make it really rewarding if you want to come in and help them, and then have it all be anonymous so that it's not, you know, so it doesn't become, like, a personal... you know, like back and forth vendetta sort of thing, and it keeps it. I don't know, like the Dark Souls thing really works.
It's a tough thing to pull off because the Dark Souls thing integrates into that narrative, into that.
Yes, it does.
In having it be a real life city, it's hard to balance the idea of you being the center of the story,
sure,
and everything revolving around what you do to affect things, and then also having other people who are.
I hear you.
Supposed to have be in that same situation.
I hear you. And from a tech standpoint, it would be really hard to know, okay, well, player right now is in this part of the city, so we need three or four players around them to populate in. But now player, like, hops in their motorcycle and runs across the city, and they're way the hell on the other side. Do we keep those people in that shard? Do we have, like, some sort of dynamic shard rotation system? I don't know. But
right.
I think that would be a cool avenue to explore. Because multiplayer...
Isn't that kind of what APB was trying to go for and not achieving at all?
APB was doing it with a more classic MMO structure, and you see that's the thing that I don't think that Grand Theft Auto needs to go down the avenue of just becoming an MMO. I mean, because there's, you know, there were PC mods that did that with Grand Theft Auto 3 and the Grand Theft Auto 3
right.
Descendants, and they were fun, and people, I mean, there was even like
yeah,
I remember
super
like
hyper realistic.
Yeah, I remember like having Sean Elliott on our podcast like years and years ago, and he was talking about like people playing cab drivers and actually driving cab routes and like
obeying the laws.
Yeah, like
all the traffic lights and everything, and being wow.
I think there's a small OCD gamer like genre there, but like for the general populace, that's probably not something they're going to be really excited about.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I do think that there is an avenue that you're kind of touching upon that would be an interesting thing for them to pursue. I don't anticipate them doing it here, but it's that sort of whatever the spiritual successor to that Autolog / Dark Souls, kind of like you're not really playing multiplayer, but you are in a connected world that is informed by what everybody else is doing in their own single player experience.
I think that's going to be a really big part of where we go with future gaming, because it can't just all be multiplayer all the time, right? I mean, actually, you know what? I'm going to skip, because this was a really good part of the discussion that came up in the official thread on Shack News. A lot of people supported your stance last week, Jeff, about liking single player. We were talking about Battlefield because we took a lot of flack.
We did, and I was very surprised how many people agreed with me, also on Twitter and in the forums. But
if you didn't read the comments, like one of the reasons we stuck to the single player story of Battlefield 3 last week is that we know we're going to be talking about the multiplayer for weeks to come. But the single player is what it is. It's a single player campaign that you sit down and play, and we figured that a lot of people would be sitting down and playing it, and that, you know, as far as timeliness of commentary, you talk about the single player game now because that's what people are playing now. We can talk about the multiplayer Battlefield for a long time to come. Several people agree with you. One of the first to agree with you was Archvile. He said, I'm getting really sick, though. So he agreed with you about this. But this is an interesting point he brought. He said, I'm getting really sick of sandbox jank or Groundhog Day ultra scripting being the binary choice in single player first-person shooter campaign design. With the rush to be Call of Duty, there's not much motivation to innovate in this field. See, I mean, I think that's a really interesting point that articulates something that I've been thinking about playing all the shooters this season, is that they have really started to gravitate to one end or the other of that polarity. Like, it's either
super scripted
or
not. I haven't played Modern Warfare 3 yet, but I think for my money, the best FPS I've played all year is Crysis 2.
Really?
Mm.
I really need to play that.
And I think that achieved a really interesting balance of giving you a really compelling, intense, over-the-top campaign storyline, but also having enough choice and creativity in the combat that it isn't all just scripted. It really is more.
But what about the auto alert enemies? I mean, the whole thing of like one enemy sees you and then everybody and their brother in the map is alerted to you.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you have the choice of sort of attacking that through a stealth thing. You know, it's the three-pronged style that they were kind of going for, the stealth, the strength, and the
right.
Speed.
Still,
yeah. I guess it is. And I found myself, you know, vacillating between all those styles and getting in a situation and realizing one was better than the other, and really allowing that kind of creativity to exist in the middle of a kind of scripted moment to moment storytelling experience. So,
I also liked Resistance 3, though.
Oh, James. Thank you. No, I like I like Crisis 2 too. I like how it'll let you approach. Though generally, I felt like it was one of those situations where, I mean, they gave you a, you would assess the situation. It would kind of be very handholdy about you can go to, you can try and get the ammo, or you can try and flank, or you can try and do this. They give you like three very specific options to approach it, which I thought helped explain and like open your eyes to potentially maybe you didn't know about, but you know, oh, there's an ammo crate over there, and you know, in old games, you just have to like play it enough and die enough times to realize there's a big ammo crate filled. And you know, I always found myself, you know, approaching every situation with stealth, and then once I was, you know,
discovered,
once, you know, then I'm like, oh, strength and fight the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they definitely had a nice blend where they had a lot of really great open areas. It was not a, you know, straight corridor shooter where enemies are scripted to be at these points, and once you kill them, you can advance down the corridor.
Right.
So it definitely had a nice feeling to it. But I do agree with your general thesis, though, that, you know,
general thesis.
Most games, you know, you have, it is very kind of, I mean, even Battlefield, though, I think about, you know, that first mission, you have that opportunity where after kind of everything's gone to hell, you can, you know, you have two or three different angles of approach on a couple situations where you have, I don't know.
Battlefield 3 is pretty tight.
Yeah,
it's pretty
tight. I agree.
This is the game where if you walk past the guy you're supposed to stab, you collapse dead.
Yeah, no, it's extremely tight. And restrictively tight. But if you don't try to push against those boundaries, it provides a very compelling experience, a very exciting, pulse-pounding, moment-to-moment experience. But you don't have the freedom to push against those boundaries.
And the differentiating point for me is that whereas like a modern warfare is this like heroic, you are a superhero leading a charge, but you're in like an individual isolated war, it doesn't feel so forced because you're always in more of, especially as they've evolved the series, you're more of in like a super spy thriller. Whereas Battlefield,
there's just always people yelling at you, telling you what to do next.
Well, sure, but in modern warfare games, you tend to come on the scene of giant battles that have either already taken place or are going to take place, but you're never there in the midst of a giant battle. You follow what I'm saying? Mm. Whereas Battlefield 3 still kind of has that in the single player. Has the knock-on of the multiplayer game, which is that they still want to give that I'm in a giant battle sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like the fourth level where you're rushing down the hill with like 35 other dudes, tons of squads. And so now you're in like what feels like it ought to be a more open fight, but it's really not because you do actually need to go do what you're supposed to be scripted to do. But it's sort of – it's fooling you enough to make you think that it's open so that when it's not, it's more glaring and in your face.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's a magic trick where if you see how it's done,
exactly,
you get more upset because it's like, well, then don't try to fool me.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and Modern Warfare is shoving you down the hall so fast and always down the hall, and it's just you being shoved down the hall that it's like being – like also since it's all just Halloween, it's like being at the haunted house.
Right.
You know?
It's a roller coaster ride. It's an amusement park ride is what it
– Exactly.
You
know, I mean this discussion completely feeds into Uncharted 3 discussion.
Let me finish real quick on this. Two things. One, just because James here and I want to compliment him, and I want to compliment him because I want to make sure that it comes back up because I think it's kind of sad that it's already gotten forgotten, is that, and I haven't played Crisis 2 yet.
Sharp dresser?
He is a sharp dresser.
Oh, thank you.
And Insomniac's work on Resistance 3 single player campaign was really excellent and has already sort of been washed over by the tide of all these other releases, and I feel bad about that because I think that of the games I played, and I need to play Crisis 2, that to me was the best single player campaign that I played. And I've already played Modern Warfare 3. So,
yes, you have.
So, you know, just take that for what it's worth.
Well, thank you.
I think the tacticality, which I'll use one of my little made up words, I like to do that, of the weapon system really got back into play the way it promised to do in the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you within this, that's the little tweak that it does to straddle the line between just being focused on down the hall single player and fooling you like you're in bigger battles. I mean, granted, they start off in this world where you know humanity's already lost. There are no big battles. Capelli's like on his own lone warrior mission, so you have that element of it. But because there's so many different ways you can use so many different elements of your weapons to do different things in the environment, that you get to these arena areas where you're moving around and doing a lot of different things and you don't feel so locked into it.
I think the best games, too, and shooter-wise, are probably the ones that mix that up really well. So, yeah. I mean, especially like Halo did a really good job of it at times where you have big open battle areas where there's a lot of guys. You can choose which way you want to attack it, which weapons. But then they also have really great scripted pieces, too, where, you know, something that you couldn't do in an open situation like that. And sometimes they even combine that where it's a big scripted boss. I always think about like the Scarab fight and how you can approach that a lot of different ways and exactly how you're going to pull it off. And you have to pull it off yourself rather than do, say, a quick time event.
Yeah, I mean, I know I say this a lot on the show, but the longer I play video games and the longer I think about what I like about video games, the more concrete I feel about the fact that when I'm allowed to express my creativity in the mechanics of a video game world, where I'm allowed to, you know, make choices, make meaty, interesting, varied choices, that's when I'm having the most fun.
And you're going to gush the hell all over Skyrim.
Right? I really am.
I can. You're already setting the table. It's like I'm hearing really him. Like am. I know exactly what he's doing.
But I mean,
you are transparent, Jeff Kanata. You are transparent.
I am because I have an invisibility potion.
Oh God.
No, but I mean that. I mean that sincerely. In that, like in relation to Resistance 3, having the ability to choose those weapons, and they're so different. They're so different in how you deal with them and how you deal with enemies through them that I'm allowed in an arena situation to express my creativity, if, to be corny about it. But and the games that allow me to do that best are the ones that are most fun. Now, I also enjoy having a story conveyed to me, and it's hard to balance those two things. But the games that do that balance best are the ones, like I would say Resistance 3 is probably in my top three of the year. And I think the two that beat it are you know, I already said Crysis 2 and Bulletstorm.
And I haven't played that either. That's another one I need to play.
I think Bulletstorm is really underrated as well, and it was so much fun and allowed me to be creative and have all these kinds of options all the time. And that's what I
so to wrap this idea up to. And give you something to think about. Gentle Gamer says these two reasons that he doesn't predicate enjoyment of a shooter on multiplayer. The first one is not desiring to spend the time to really hone the skills and be a great, you know, multiplayer demon. It makes a lot of sense. But also that when playing multiplayer, his enjoyment is so affected by other players, whether it be teammates or griefers or anything else, that they, like, the control of the situation is out of his hands. And when he's sitting down to enjoy his entertainment time, which keep in mind these are entertainments, he'd rather have control over his entertainment time. So you guys have control over your entertainment time. We'd appreciate it if you stuck around. We still have three more segments to come on the show today. We're going to talk about Uncharted 3 when we come back on the other side, because that's the other end of this open world versus scripted scene. We're going to get Richard Lemarchand's comments from Eurogamers talking about that. We also have some news, including a $50 3DS game. Can you believe it? That's a lot of money for a 3DS game.
It's in 3D.
I'm saving my comments for later.
With no glasses.
So there you go. You're going to want to hear them. Stick around. We'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 85,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For We Can Confirm listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a free chance to try out their service. One audiobook to consider is Ready Player One. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. That's audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. Hey, everybody. Thanks for sticking around. All right. We are back. We still have everybody here, although we made a little rotation. We audibled in Del Rio from the booth.
Had to do it. Had to do it because I know we're talking about some Ratchet & Clank All for One.
And you're all about the All for One, right?
I love that series.
And so. You also did a good job. Did you set us up some great music today? We have some more House from 44th and Filth with Simon Jane's Last Exit coming up in the music break here after the third segment.
Yep, so, thanks, Andy Reid.
Thanks, of course, to Andy Reid, our big-time player. He was here over the summer. I was not.
You missed that one. Special guest. Hey, see you later.
I did not do that on purpose. All right, so let's talk about some All for... Well, actually, let's talk about Uncharted, because the other end, we were talking about scripted games. We're talking about being in the midst of scripted games. And Uncharted, interestingly enough, one of the things that people started to take it to task for, which is interesting to me because it's a narrative-driven game, was that the fact that it's scripted. Now, you guys have all played Uncharted.
Yep. Yeah.
Did the scripting of it, did the nature of it being a story-driven game and taking you through the stories, like, stand out to you? Did it get in the way for you?
Well, it certainly is a story-driven game. I mean, it is probably the world's best example of a story-driven game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does story better than any other shooter. I mean, maybe including like an RPG or something, maybe with lots of text, but really for the type of game it is, an action-adventure game, it's the best story of any action-adventure game, period.
I think including its predecessors.
Yes.
It tricks you into thinking that you're actually making these decisions on this cool journey, and you're not, like, that's what I love about Uncharted. It's I'm sitting there and it's like, okay, I'm doing this puzzle and I'm making all these choices, and it's really I'm just going where they want me to go, but it gives me the sense that I've actually decided where I need to go, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is the shooting is terrible.
Oh my god, the shooting's god awful.
It's terrible, and there's a lot of it.
There's less. There's a decided reduction of shooting in Uncharted 3 compared to Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 1. You don't shoot for like the first, what, maybe 2 hours of the game, at least 90 minutes of the game. You do not shoot or barely shoot at all.
But then they make up for it with...
By way of reference, terrible, compared to prior Uncharteds, even like it got worse.
It feels like it. And it's interesting. I was hoping to have time to go back and play a little more of 2 just as a frame of reference, because I don't remember it being... that bad. And it may be just that we've kind of progressed a couple of years,
sure,
and it feels more antiquated. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right, James, in that there are many more puzzles than there ever have been. And the puzzles are more interesting, and they're actual puzzles rather than just compare your notes to the thing.
Well, I'm going to like this one more than ever.
It's awesome.
You're still looking at your notes a lot. But...
And there's more fist fights, too. They do a lot more fist fights and a lot more traversal. So it's kind of like they used all three of those to...
So you're fighting, and then now all of a sudden you're battling the 60 guys they throw in you. Hey, kill him. That shit drives me nuts. But now there's these like almost quick time melee events happen, like in Batman, where you're dodging and you're blocking, and all of a sudden this guy comes up with a shotgun and he's blasting at you, and you're stuck in this melee combat while you're fighting this guy. Mm-hmm. And this other guy kills you because he's got a shotgun, and you can't really focus on him. You're focusing on this other guy.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that the game is butted right up against the release of Batman, because Batman does hand-to-hand combat so well. And I feel like I disliked the hand-to-hand stuff in Uncharted 3 more because I had just played it done so well.
See, now here's the thing. I played Batman afterwards. I had Uncharted relatively early, and I finished a couple weeks ago, so I played Batman after. But for me, I think that was what I thought the shooting, and there, now to caveat all of this, there may be a bug. No, we're not sure. Like, it's still kind of getting figured out right now with Uncharted's aiming mechanic.
Yeah.
There might be something weird with the diagonal. There's a big thread on Gaff about it.
Well, sure, Lick Chan brought it up, a longtime listener. Thanks for your support, of course. And that was his question he threw out here. Uncharted 3 aiming issues. Go.
Well, yeah. Is there an issue with shooting someone in the face with a shotgun 4 times and he doesn't seem to notice? Is there a glitch with that? Because that's what I...
Well, that figures into the multiplayer. I mean, now that's a love it. Oh, it does. I'm saying that's a love it or hate it part of it. Like, one of the things one of the consistent knocks I've heard about the multiplayer in Uncharted is that you have to recognize that it's a different animal, and that, you know, that people are bigger bullet sponges there than you're accustomed to being in other games. So you're not going to be able to get someone with a couple of shots, unless it's a headshot, obviously. But that's one of those adjustment things, is that the bullet physics are not realistic.
Yeah.
And you have a different sort of, it's a different mechanic to how many shots does it take to bring down an opponent?
Well, here's the problem. I mean, we're kind of talking around the same thing, which is this game does story so incredibly well. Mm-hmm. So it is so polished. And the narrative is absolutely stunningly delivered. I mean, I feel like it is better than any movie that came out this summer.
Yeah.
In terms of pure larger than life spectacle. I mean, it's like 10 times what Transformers is the biggest movie of the summer as far as over the top action. There's like 6 sequences in Uncharted that would be the coolest movie you have ever seen. And a budget of X million, and it is on a scale and size that is so staggering, and it is so much fun to be a part of, that you are a part of this thing moving through it. But every time that you're not moving the story forward, every time that you are in a shooting sequence or playing a video game, I think it is even worse of that thing we're talking about with the sort of narrative dissonance, because it feels so much like a film, and there are such wonderful camera angles and locations and dialogue, and all these things come together in such a perfect harmony that every time I'm actually dealing with the business of playing a video game that it is completely – it's like, well, this isn't – this doesn't make any sense.
Right. Completely like, agree.
Why are there 400 missiles being shot at me from you know, rocket launchers around the – like, nobody would do that in the context of this awesome narrative that's actually happening. You know, why – like you're saying, why when I'm in a fist fight, is there a guy shooting at both me and his friend with a shotgun point blank?
They weren't really friends.
You know, like it,
they'd had a couple of beers after work, but they weren't really friends.
It sticks out so much more like a sore thumb that it feels that much worse because everything else is so good.
What would you think of the game if it didn't have that? Because
I would love this game if it didn't have any shooting in it. If you just let me do the puzzles, let me traverse the world, let me look at it.
I don't know.
Maybe a couple fist fights here and there. It's like an Indiana Jones movie. I mean,
Indiana Jones had some great gunfighting. I mean,
he did, but I don't need 50. Okay, I don't need 50 guys coming at me at one time in one section, and then once I beat that, I get to go do some cool shit. It's like maybe spread them out or do something where they're sneaking up on you.
I think if you guys have the complaint of, you know, the gunfighting takes me out of it and bores me. I mean, I think if it had gunfighting that you really enjoyed, you would, and you looked forward to it, then you wouldn't care that there was gunfighting. And maybe that's more
that's
of the
accurate.
Issue. So it's not so much that, oh, the game, the gunfighting takes me out of it. And for me, it wasn't always, it's not the gunfighting. There's sometimes where it'd be an insta-death. You know, like you have to execute something perfectly. I think when you're young Drake, and I didn't figure out that I had to like jump off to the left and I kept dying, that took me out of it briefly because I was just
Those are basically QTE sequences.
Right.
And I think it's impressive that they managed to pull off what is ostensibly a QTE sequence in the context of the mechanics established by the game.
Right. And you have full control. I think it's just like those are
because
the
they didn't
things...
use the Unreal Engine.
Oh. Well, regardless, I think it's like when you constantly get pulled out because you die and have to repeat something in a game that's so narrative driven and so story driven. And whether that's a gunfight that you just are getting frustrated by because there's so many guys with rocket launchers and shotguns that kill you really quickly, or if it's a kind of something you don't catch on right away and you die a few times in a long cinematic event.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the moments that pull you out of the cinematic narrative and the pacing that they've worked really, really hard to get going.
Right? I think pacing is a key word too, because I was struck by how well-paced the game is. I think the second half of the game is much better than the first half.
Oh,
overall.
I think the second half is fantastic.
Yeah. But I will say that, you know, all these games, having just played Battlefield 3, for example, the single-player experience in that, and, you know, all of the Call of Duties and all of that sort of genre of on 11, of just dropping you into the most action-packed moment of a mission, and then when you're done with that, moving on to the next most action-packed moment of a mission and not having any connective tissue because we don't want to waste your time. We just want to give you the on 11 parts. There is such an argument to be made for pacing, for how this game has some of the most pulse-pounding, incredible cinematic sequences I have ever played. And then I love the fact that we have a sequence where we're in a hotel room and they're having a little discussion and Nathan Drake puts his head on the lap of, you know, the female lead. It's like these things are what stories are about, and giving the player a chance to breathe, having a moment where you're just wandering around looking at stuff, that is valuable, and it makes all those other pulse-pounding sequences all the better.
And it pulls you in.
We're going to have fun when we talk about Skyrim. No, we are, because I want you to keep that in mind next segment when we get around to Skyrim, because that's always been my problem, is the distractions. And I want to also ask, did you you play Batman, right?
Yeah.
Have you guys
finished Batman?
You guys all play Batman also? Okay, yep. So Andrew Yoon reviewed it for Shack News, and I really thought his review was interesting, not having played Arkham City. But I loved Arkham Asylum, and he, at the end of it all, said he liked, you know, Arkham City plenty fine, God, how great a game it was and everything, but found that he enjoyed Arkham Asylum a little better.
Yep.
And the reason was all of those things you're talking about, really, is the pacing and the cultured experience and the way it like gave him this great Batman story. And there were times that you were fooled a little bit into having open space, but it wasn't open space. Whereas to him, I loved his analogy. So Andrew, I'm going to use your analogy because I thought it was really good. And this is what he built the review around, was that Arkham Asylum was this delicious, fantastic sit down 5-course meal that a chef had taken, you know, great pains to like put everything together the right way and have you have this fantastic experience. And Arkham City was like going to the Bellagio's buffet.
Yeah. I agree.
It's all there, and it's all delicious.
But I agree with him 100%. Because in my opinion, is that, and like I said, not to take anything away from Arkham City. It's one of the best games I've played this year. It's a ton of fun. You should play it for sure. But my preference is Arkham Asylum. And I almost think of it as, you know, they took the, it's a lot of the same things. It's a lot of the same mechanics. It's a lot of the, you know, similar gadgets and different ways of approaching situations. But Arkham Asylum is a Metroid game. Okay. And Arkham City is an open world game. Mm-hmm. And to me, I liked how dense and connected everything is in Arkham Asylum.
So that being the case, doesn't Uncharted need those gunfights, those high adrenaline moments to be that connective tissue, to stitch it together and be that part of Drake's personality?
Well, there's plenty of high octane moments that have nothing to do with being a third person shooter game. There is so much you do in this game that is absolutely it's not, summer movie.
It's not a true shooter. It's not a straight shooter. It's an action adventure game. There's a strong adventure element to it that most shooters don't have. You wouldn't compare this to like Gears 3 in the same way. They're both, you could say they're both third person shooters, but that's not really giving Uncharted its, you know, its true nature.
It's a game that puts a lot of guns in your hands and has a multiplayer component that is entirely built around having a gun in your hand and running around and shooting people. Is this your wants for the game or what the game is?
Well, I mean, I don't even know how to answer that question because the game is what the game is. But what I'm saying is that in a game that asks you to care about, you know, a singular character living or dying in certain moments, when you have literally mowed down hundreds of people on your way to the conclusion, it just doesn't make any damn sense.
And yet you did. make any sense, Jim. There's so many dead.
Let me also say, before we get too far away from the Batman discussion, that I think it's completely valid to feel that way about Asylum versus City, but if I would take huge issue with anybody that says that the story in Asylum is better than the story in City. The story in Asylum is kind of ridiculous, and the story in City, other than the fact that the premise upon which it's based, which is we gave the bad guys a whole city, that's a little ridiculous. But the actual plot of the game is one of the great Batman stories that has ever been told. It is great. I mean, it's up there with some of the very good comic book stories of Batman. It weaves together the entire Rogues Gallery in a very seamless way. I think it's much better than Asylum.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad game. I'm just saying for me, it was easy. It's easy for me to put that game down. The pacing is such to where it slows down or I'm having a problem with something where it's like I get frustrated and it's like, okay, I can put this game down for a minute. And it's Asylum was easy to pick up. This one is like, do I really want to struggle with this right now? Because I just struggled with it last time. And I got Uncharted 3 right there. And Uncharted 3 I've been playing that for the last two nights. Like, I think I'm on chapter 10 or 11 right now. And it's been so much fun to play and so hard to put down. And it's like, I should probably go to bed. It's 2 in the morning.
You're just about to get to where it gets
really good. Yeah,
you're just about to get to where it gets even better. It's going to be, oh my God.
If that's the case, then
that back half of that game, like when you hit the shipyard, it's like, oh,
it is. You cannot
God.
Believe that they achieved this. Honestly, like, if they just filmed this as a film, it would be one of the best movies I have ever seen.
But it's not. It's a game. And this is a differentiating point that I think is important to keep bringing back into the discussion, is that it's not a film. If it wanted to be a film, it could be a film. But this is a game. And so you have that interactive component. And that's one of those big balance points that designers have to really consider, is that if you are asking a player to invest in playing the game, you want to give them a game to play. And that's one of those balance issues that for a narrative-driven game has to be a tough challenge. So, you know, looking at the other game that we're going to talk about here, All for One, Ratchet & Clank has a great history of being a fantastic mechanics game. You know, great adventure platforming, great guns. What's that?
15.
He's like, the producer's in the booth, so he can't really give me the time counts. It has a great reputation for having, you know, great platforming and adventure and exploration elements combined with a great weapon system and lots of fun to do in the game action, okay, while you're playing it. And at the same time, having a goofy but really fun story, right? So now they've transferred some of that into All for One, but I'm really curious, Dave, as a fan coming to this, since you played it, how well did it carry over and how easy was it for you to put down All for One?
All for One is an awesome game so far, and I played it with my roommate who hasn't played any of them.
Well, that's interesting.
So I just wanted to try it out, and I took your advice. I'm playing as Quark, and he's playing as Ratchet. And the dialogue in this game is funny. The pacing is great. And if anybody's
gonna make out later, James is just beaming.
If I'm a big fan. Somebody told me to play Ratchet and Clank, the very first one, and I was like, that game looks kind of stupid. It looks like it's for kids. And I'll tell you what, I have not. I've been excited for every single Ratchet and Clank. It's the reason I bought my PS3 was because of the Ratchet and Clank exclusive on there. And I was like, you know what? I love this series. But going through it co-op is fun because it takes you back to that. You're fighting against the enemies, but you're also competing against each other because there's only a certain amount of bolts you have to get, and the bolts is how you buy. It's like your currency.
They're the economy, yeah.
Yeah, it's how you buy your guns. And the guns in this game.
TM. Yeah, TM.
Yeah, Ratchet and Clank, the weapons in this is what makes this series so much fun for me because they're so quirky and crazy, but you guys also do a great job of explaining how to use your weapons with these quick little animations. With it's like a little cartoon showing you like, oh, if you and your partner do this, this is what you can do. Shows the bad guys blowing up, but it's just really fun. And
it's a very different sort of game. It's not a traditional Ratchet and Clank game. It's a cooperative, more oriented towards run through the levels together, and as opposed to going
it's more
through
of a beat 'em up kind
beat
of.
Em up.
It's a beat 'em. Yeah. That's where I was going. It's a classic beat 'em up.
Right, and I'm not
and
sure
how effective is it.
It's awesome with two people. I couldn't imagine playing this game with four people cooperatively. Like the chaos that would ensue trying to get bolts and kill things is probably pretty nuts. And I hopefully get to try it. But with two people, it's really fun because you still get enough bolts to get to the weapons you want.
Here's my question for you. So how did your friend who's never played Ratchet and Clank, who never played this, how is he taking it? Like, what is his reaction to the game?
He's loving it. I mean, the best part about this game is, like I said, the pacing. The world that you get to go through and get to see, it's like you get the moments where you're sliding and it's just like you don't have to do too much, but then you get a look around on what you're sliding over and sliding under and like the waterfalls and the floating cities, and it's amazing. And I've always loved that about the game too, is just the art aspect that it brings to the table. But it's an easy game to jump in, play, jump out, and not get – it's easy to get caught up in, but it's easy to put down, if that makes sense. It's a game that, as a person who does music and I don't have a lot of time – it's not too difficult, but I don't feel like I'm pushing over. You know what I mean? Like, right. I don't feel like it's a rollover game either. So to me, it's a good balance of everything.
If you go over to Insomniac's website, one of the things that's interesting that they blogged about recently is the size of the team that put together this game. It was a really small team within the studio that put it together, of folks who were really dedicated, really committed
four
to
people.
It.
Four people. They each did one character.
Yep, you know.
All four.
They're out on, I mean, they're not even within our Burbank studio. They're all out on the East Coast in North Carolina. So there's a whole kind of group that moved out there to start our new studio. And there's about 30 folks who are out there for 3 years. So they've been working on this. Actually, they were working on it before we finished A Crack in Time. So they've put a lot of time and a lot of love into this game.
Yeah.
Is this positioned as a sort of side direction for the series? You're still going to continue with the main line?
Well, I mean, who knows what's going to happen. But, you know, it's definitely, in terms of the story, it is the next chapter. It ties into the comics a little bit. And so, you know, and those kind of tied directly to the end of A Crack in Time. So it's definitely kind of the next chapter of the story. It's definitely self-contained, though, and has its own sort of story element to it.
And you kind of did this with Up Your Arsenal, went a different route in like, the story sense. Deadlock, sorry.
Yeah.
So I know that happened too. It's like with Ratchet and Clank, it's just a smorgasbord of what you're going to get in every game.
Sure.
Yeah, so I think it's a very passionate team that put it together, and that really comes across. And I think that that's indicative a lot of times of these games that are bringing something that we have, you know, haven't seen for a little while into a modern context. And the Pixel Junk guys have also done the same things with the games they've worked on. You've seen them take, and obviously Dylan's even talked about this before, Dylan Cuthbert, who's the studio director and founder of Q Games, how he's taken ideas that he had before in prior eras and modernized them into the current game era. The latest one that Pixel Junk has done is Side Scroller, which Ariel was the associate producer on. And Jeff and I were voiceover talent on. So I'm just like throwing that out there so you guys know that. But the point is that both these games, one of them being All for One, which was a modern reinterpretation of Brawler, and then Side Scroller, which is a modern reinterpretation of a shoot 'em up slash bullet hell, but not really exactly either of them, play off of games that used to be really popular and have sort of maybe gone fallow a little bit. And then you bring them back into modern take. So what's the trick to doing that right, and did Side Scroller get it right?
Yeah, I'm interested to see what you have to hear about it, because...
Well, I mean, I think...
the ending is fantastic! Yeah. Have you heard the ending? It's great!
You picked the right voiceover artist.
Heck yeah.
You know, I have not finished side scroller. I find it very hard.
Are you playing on normal or on casual?
I'm playing on normal. Yeah, should I be on casual?
Here's the thing. Well, if you're having trouble with normal, then you can go ahead and play it on casual.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I just, you know, when I was young and spry and played all these games in the arcades, I could hang.
In the arcades.
I remember, you know, I was all about 1942 and I was all about, you know,
Time Pilot,
Ikaruga and all the...
Ikaruga.
And now I feel like my skills have atrophied and I am.
But part of the atrophy might be we just don't play that sort of game that much. If you go back and if you play this a lot, you will get better at it. And that's part of the idea behind it is that it is also it's an old, like arcade games. It's motor skill based. There's a great deal of the game that is based around improving your ability to like play it.
Yeah. And it's got that classic pixel junk sense of style where it's like, oh, man, it doesn't feel antiquated. It doesn't feel old fashioned. It feels like the newest, latest, best. But it's this style that I haven't dipped my feet into in quite a while, and I got my butt kicked, man. Yeah. I got my butt kicked quite a lot. But
yeah, I mean, if you're having trouble with normal, go ahead and kick it back to casual. I mean, if you get a game over in normal, for instance, you can actually lower the difficulty of the game and continue from the last checkpoint.
Yeah, that's cool.
In casual, so when you know we've implemented features in the game so that if you are having trouble with it, you know you can just drop it down in difficulty and continue.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll be able to hone your skills a bit more, challenge normal. Then when you're ready to challenge hard and brutal after that, you know, we've implemented a lot of incentive to replay.
Yeah, different endings. I know that.
Different endings. We've got different visual effects. The entire look of the game changes depending on what difficulty you're playing. We also have some fancy cheat codes.
If I'm on casual, does it just have flowers that attack me?
It's not.
Stuffed animals.
There is a level that has snacks.
Snacks, yeah.
The snacks are kind of awesome because the game still has the overheat mechanic to it, right? Mm. And so there are later levels where they're like, remember like in, did you play Shooter 2?
Yeah.
So you remember in Shooter 2 when you're like in the acid area, the acid monsters you hit and then they explode water, then you use the water to cool off or wash off the acid. So they have that sort of monster in here, and like there's particularly tough spots, then they're like snacks to help you get past because there aren't actually any water fountains in that area.
Yeah, little jellies. You shoot them, they explode with water, and they heal you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, damage is persistent this time, unlike the earlier shooter games where you can actually cool down over time. Once you get one hit, you enter a sort of damaged mode, and you have to find some water to cool down.
Yeah, and there's checkpoints for the first time in a
that's
game
a nice
like
thing.
This.
Yeah, yes,
it's like thankfully.
So I think that as we start transitioning into talking about like this idea of moving these genres into the modern era, one of the things that I found especially so Ariel and I played through Side Scroller cooperatively last night, and admittedly that's a crutch for me because she's played the game up, down, sideways, she's beaten it on brutal easily, and I was able to, you know, obviously cruise through. But one of the things that I found it's very interesting about this.
I was like,
it's a great way to get through. So there's the immediate element you see of modernizing these games where, you know, like All for One, obviously the 3D environments that you can do on a PS3 are so far beyond what the PS2 could have done when the series originated that now you can do a game like this and you can have all four players on the screen. You can pull the camera back and have like these cool environments. They can crawl around and move all over. Or, you know, if you want to go at the other end of the extreme, you can have like this really cool, like, we can make the screen look like it's fishbowl, like an old CRT, and add in special effects to make it look like snow, and then do all of these oversaturated colors and turn the fluids into cubes and triangles and geometry and just like do all kinds of batshit insane visuals. And yet it would still be the same game if we didn't evolve the game mechanics some. So I haven't played All for One enough to know if you guys did something similar. So you can kind of listen like to what I'm going to say about Shooter and see if you can and find an analogy. Shooter is not either Side-scroller is not either a bullet hell shooter or a just pure adrenaline shoot 'em up. It finds balances in between by pulling from good encounter elements of both and weaving them together into a tapestry of each level. And by that, what I'm saying is that if you go through the levels and you progress, there are times when you are in all-out shoot the shit out of everything in front of you mode. And then there are other times where you are very much in that, wow, here is a really cool a bullet pattern that I've got to decipher my navigation route through. And the way those are interspersed with each other makes for a nice rhythm of playing it that isn't isn't exactly true to either one or the other, but just like adding checkpoints makes the game, you know, bring forward a little bit the idea of like, oh, we're having checkpoints and now it's like a little more playable. Having that sort of rhythm that keeps it from getting so, quite so just you know, like just laser into one thing, to me makes it more interesting. Mm-hmm. It still, though, has that characteristic of, to play this game really great, the idea is that you look at the leaderboard and every time you go back, you want it to show your new rank because you want the rank to be higher than the last rank. And if it doesn't show your rank, you're like, shit, I didn't do better. Because you want to do better every time, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the whole thing, is to come back and play and get better at it. Did you guys approach, when you came to All for One, did you like have some areas where you were able to take, oh, we know it's been beat 'em up before, but let's do something else, or like let's pull from different pieces of it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of variety, especially. We tried to, you know, really hammer home the idea of, you know, this kind of four-player beat 'em up adventure, but with a lot of cinematic co-op moments, and try and bring that next-gen newness to it. So, I mean, there's a moment where you're riding on the back of this gigantic guardian robot, yeah, and you're all on turrets, and you're firing at these other gigantic guardian robots, and there's stuff you just would have never seen before, or kind of these democratic vehicles where you're on, like, a life raft, and you all have to choose which direction. If you all choose the same direction, you go faster in that direction, but, you know, people might be choosing different directions, someone might be trying to grief the group. So I think it was kind of like looking at the basic co-op actions and trying to figure out how you could take four-player co-op and do it in interesting and unique ways besides just kind of the standard beating each other up, shooting lots of enemies. And I think we built the weapon system into that too. And there's been games since like Off-Road where as you play over time, you would upgrade, yeah, your different abilities and things like that. But we definitely wanted to take that to a level where you'd be able to kind of choose which weapons you're going to buy and which weapons you wanted to upgrade. And then, you know, how you play, you can enhance your character leading up to that point.
Democratic lifeboat scares me.
Yeah. I have a question from both of you, actually, because we've talked a lot on this show in recent weeks about how crowded a time of year this is for huge games. And it feels like both of your games, with all due respect, are sort of, you know, a little more under the radar than some of these huge marquee. I mean, Ratchet & Clank's a big franchise and Pixel Junk is a big franchise, but I feel like there's definitely a danger that both of these games can get lost in the shuffle a little bit. How do you guys feel about this time of year releasing your games?
It's brutal. Yeah. I mean, we launched against Batman. Yeah. Like, come on, that's tough.
Yeah.
And we can say as much as you want, you know, oh, we're going to be counter-programming to Batman, but there's only so many dollars on the market. There's so when people go out and buy games, they only have so many dollars in their pocket to buy games. And when you talk about Batman, Battlefield, Modern Warfare, I mean, you got to be even be scared. Uncharted.
Assassin's Creed,
Skyrim. Like, even these big games kind of have to be scared from each other a little bit because there's not enough dollars to pay for all of them in people's pockets, and people don't have enough time.
You just rattled off $500 retail worth of games.
Right, right.
And 500 hours worth of investment.
Please buy mine.
And that's just Skyrim.
You know, and even with these great deals like Target and Amazon, and I think Best Buy next week have buy two, get one free, like that helps sell more games. But, you know, people just, okay, I bought my three games, I'm good for a month and a half now. And it's like, I'll wait till Christmas for everything else. So it's rough. You know, we always look at it. You always look at it, and everyone has to look and think about the projections of selling next, you know, in the first quarter.
Yeah.
But publishers have schedules. They have other games coming out they need to promote. Fiscal year is a reality, and this is the biggest buying time of the year when people put the most dollars, buy multiple times in November, December. And you just hope to pick up on some of that, and projections show your best coming out at this time, and you may get into some bundles or have some other holiday deals. So you just kind of roll that dice and hope for the best as far as a retail product goes.
No, I think with both of our games, the brands of our games speak very highly of themselves. Now, in Pixel Junk case, we are not a full like retail title. Like,
right, your digital space.
Yeah. So, and I think that helps us a little bit in this instance.
Really? Do you think that... digital games overall don't suffer from a little being overlooked?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, yeah, we're not going to be on store shelves. At the same time,
yeah, you don't
we
get
have
it,
a lot
buy
of
one to buy two, get one free. Yeah, Toys R Us, yeah, thing. You know,
I mean, at the same time, our game is much less expensive, mm-hmm, than a full blown retail game. It's much easier to say, oh, well, I can spend $10 on this. It's only $10.
You know,
it's not.
I'm gonna have to look over the break. But I expressed concern for digital games coming out during this time of year. And yet one of them just, was it Dungeon Defenders? That just said they did like 200,000 units the first week or something. Hmm. I was like, holy cow, like that is really impressive. Wow. One of the digitally distributed games that we've been talking about lately just had like a news post that said, oh yeah, we did 200,000 first week. That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, wow, that's like setting the world on fire.
It's anyone's game.
And, you know, lots of kids, too. Like, you know, over the holidays, lots of kids will get PlayStation gift cards, be going on to look for new games and things like that. So, you know, there's something to being new and shiny during a holiday season when people are looking for stuff to play.
Mm. Well, if you guys think you had a little problem, imagine being War in the North and launching 1 week before Skyrim and trying to find that magic also of bringing a genre that has been overlooked a lot lately, and mainly because Snowblind's been at work for this for 3 years. These are the guys who did Champions of Norrath, Dark Alliance, games we loved in the prior generation. But judging by the reviews, people seem to not have quite as much fancy for hacking and slashing and gathering loot. I like it.
I think they're going to change their tune when Diablo comes out. But yeah.
Well, of course, that'll be Diablo. Well, speaking of changing tunes, we've got a little tune from last week. And, well.
Oh, God.
Hit it, Dave.
Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater?
This is how we do it.
Hater. Party songs. Fun, 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 fun party songs. He was doing the panda roll.
Panda roll.
Panda roll.
Pandang.
Later.
Pandang.
I think it's brilliant.
I think it's brilliant.
I think it's brilliant.
I think it's brilliant.
Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater?
The pandas what did it for you? The panda.
Hater. 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 Hater.
Hater. Now, you have to understand that pandas were already an established part of the lore much before the panda came out.
They were a Warcraft. Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a
all
hater?
All I want to do is
my mom canceling my free realms. I got to give me a panda and wow.
Well,
wow.
I just
that's
don't even
kind of catch you.
I have no idea how to follow that up.
I think Del Rio showed remarkable restraint with which audio clips he selected.
He says there's a lot to go with. I'm sure there was a lot to go with. Just following up real quickly, the game that did so well was Dungeon Defenders, which has been getting great reviews.
That's what you said.
You played it.
I was just saying
I confirmed that.
Yeah.
It was 250,000. However, the majority of them were on PC, 80%. So that's interesting. You know, yeah. Digital distribution platform gives you a lot of flexibility. And I think that increasingly in the coming months, hopefully we'll see, you know, I think part of the influence here is the influence you've seen with the indie scene. You know, indies have been huge in Steam. They've been, you know, and again, a lot of the XBLA titles really ultimately are indie titles. There's so many people at work there, like making it work. It's like once you've got it out, you're like, okay, I need to get it into other platforms. I need to get other places where I can sell it.
Also,
it feels
like
you're gonna look at that. You can take a look at that and say, well, hey, Dungeon Defenders, we may have thought it was an XBLA game, but really, we did really awesome on PC. And other people are gonna look at that and go, I wonder if my title would do really well on PC.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a genre that lives on the PC already. You know, that mm-hmm. sort of tower defense-y kind of thing.
I think any like digital distribution game, like having it on another platform in Steam and other stores, like it can't hurt, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like anytime you have a game, the more places you can sell it, the better. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting to see what a lot of indie devs do with multi-platform development.
Well, you guys have already played or are already playing around with it with Facebook. And you know, if you're not already doing the Monsters Alpha, can anyone get into that now?
Everyone can get into it now.
I think you guys should just do Pixel Junk Facebook, and it's like a redesign of Facebook that's way cooler and
like
sort of retro.
A Pixel Junk branded Facebook.
Yeah,
where
I like
it's
it.
All Pixel Junk. Yeah. That would be awesome, actually.
Did you like Monsters?
You should. Yeah,
you should
yeah.
play.
It's not really my jam, but
you're not tower defense guy.
I play a little of them, but. No, not really.
What about Eugene Babb?
I love Pixel Junk Monsters. And actually, the guy on my team, who's our web developer, Tim, he like not only loves Pixel Junk Monsters, but he has like all the DLC. He's like, what is it, 3-starred, 5-starred, whatever the...
Rainbowed, yeah.
That's
yes,
it.
He's rainbowed them.
He's rainbowed everything in that game. So he's a huge, huge fan. And I don't.
Is he playing the Facebook game?
I don't know. I need
he's
to,
got to.
Yeah, I've got to tell him.
It's great.
We're all into Facebook games now, so there's some good stuff.
It's actually really well done. And the whole he'll jam on it because the whole idea of rainbowing levels is how you earn the ability to move forward in the game and get more territories mm-hmm. and expand outside your islands. It's actually really, it's kind of clever.
Nice. It's really I think having clever. A mouse interface would probably be awesome.
Oh, it's
too.
Great. Yeah, it works great with the genre. I mean, obviously, tower defense is
who would have known?
I feel like tower defense, for my money, tower defense, more than almost any other genre, I feel like once I've played one, I've played them all.
Did you feel that way about... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I typically don't like tower defense games, but there was something about Monsters that clicked with me. Hmm. And I think maybe the style had a lot to do with it. It's cute. You are controlling an avatar in the game. You're not just pointing and clicking around.
Well, the upgrade mechanic is dynamic. Instead of you like earning
dynamic
is dynamic. It's dynamic because you can use Tiki Dude to upgrade your attack towers as well as buying upgrades, where many other tower defense games are always built around earn money, use the money in the downtime to like upgrade towers and then watch what happens. Whereas now you have like this dynamic thing of like running Tiki Man around, and do you collect coins, or do you go over here and strengthen your arrow tower, or do you go for the gem? And you know, like that adds a little more dynamic gameplay.
Did you play Trenched?
I did. I like Trenched.
So, I mean, that's tower defense, right? Kind of.
Well, we were talking about that a while ago. I feel like that in Dungeon Defenders, for example, are sort of this weird like hybrid action-y
Orcs Must Die
version. And Orcs Must Die. It's something else, I think. It's got a little tower defense. It's got a little... But Monsters is more traditional tower defense than that.
Well, compared to something like Trenched,
Did you play Anomaly, Warzone Earth?
No.
It's backwards tower defense. And like I would say that
tower
I'm...
Tower offense?
It's tower offense.
Oh.
So the AI is the towers, and you are an attacking force. Hmm. And what you're doing is you're power boosting your attacking force as they move through the gauntlet of the towers, right? Hmm. And I have to tell you that I'm not the hugest tower defense fan in the first place, but I didn't like that. I didn't like the reversal of it at all. I was it just didn't do anything for me. And I don't know why. I mean, obviously a lot of people like it. I don't mean to just diss on the game, but there was something that was not... Like, just watching my little train of, like, trucks and tanks and laser things go through the gauntlet and, like, popping, you know, repair and popping smoke and doing that kind of stuff on them, I was just sort of like, this wasn't as fun as trying to reactionarily deal with the assault team coming at me. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably why I like Monsters. Why the original Catch a Monster, back to that thing, is, like, having Tiki Man to run around gives you, like, best of both worlds. It's like there's the strategy of how do you lay out your... defense forces and where do you spend your money, and then there's the tactics of so how do I use Tiki Man in the course of the attack.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool. War in the North, Snowblind finally back. I feel like I'm the lone, like I felt like at first when I was reading like Twitter and stuff, I felt like I was the lone person who was really loving this game. I really like it. I mean, I love these sorts of games in the first place. I love Diablo, obviously. Mm-hmm. I loved Dark Alliance, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. If you didn't play that, I think that was legendary, right? And I love the Norrath games that Snowblind did. And this really is, and maybe this is part of the challenge, which is why I brought it into the discussion there at the end of the last block, is that their big emphasis here was really engine related. Really, really engine related. So whereas these used to be in that isometric, you know, sort of, there's like a, you know, like a three-dimensional blueprint of the world in front of you, and you pull the camera back up and away from it and you move your guy around. It's now very much in the third person, classic third person over the shoulder action camera. Maybe pulled back a hair more than you would in Gears, you know, give a little more scene and settings, but it's pulled you into that environment. It's super detailed in the visuals, and that alone, I think, occupied a tremendous amount of their attention in what they were trying to do here. So when you get down to it past that, the game mechanic is still the classic go in, beat the hell out of everything, troll it all for loot, put together the best set of armor and equipment for your guy, and balance that with your skill tree and your attributes ups to make yourself the kind of player that you want to tailor to your playstyle. So you're gonna, like, your phone buzzing.
I'm blowing up.
You're
Sorry.
Blowing up. You're the coolest.
I think that that game might have a little IP fatigue going on. I think might be more to it than anything else.
No, Lord of the Rings has been kind of dormant for a while. It's like good to see it back. Blu-ray release, like people maybe getting back into it a little bit. Maybe. Hobbit coming up, Hype Train going there. I don't know.
There was
a lot of games like 5 years ago, 4 years ago, but I feel like there hasn't been a Lord of the Rings game in a while. Like that's sort of what appeals to me. I'm like, oh, I want to play some. Yeah, Lord of the Rings might be fun. I kind of miss that IP a little bit.
I think that this specific game kind of intrigues me, and I would like to get a chance to play it. But I think maybe with what Jim Bob was saying,
Jim Bab.
I just want to say that as much as possible. sorry, I got a little distracted. but a lot of those older Lord of the Rings games were strategy games. Yeah.
Aside from the movie, there's the strategy, but then there's the movie
aside from the license games, which I thought were enjoyable. I mean, I played them all. I mean, I'm a huge Lord of the Rings person.
Wasn't it Stormfront that did them? I think it was Stormfront.
Yeah, they did one for each. Well, no, they did two Towers and Return of the King, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed those. I'm not a strategy game person, though. And when I heard that this game came out, I was somehow under the impression that it was another strategy game.
Yeah.
And
well, just it has not gotten much attention. Like, it's
no,
just,
it hasn't.
It's
that that subtitle does kind of lead one to think that it's a strategy game.
That was just what I assumed, and so I immediately kind of wrote it off. Whereas what I'm hearing now is that, oh, I would actually really enjoy this kind of game. And so now I'm interested in playing it. But well, if
you
I
can play it over the weekend, but be that as it may, the two things here that stand out to me, number one, is that the franchise fatigue point, let me ask you a question. Do you think it's franchise fatigue with the Lord of the Rings as a overarching thing? Like, is it going to affect The Hobbit or is it?
No, I think it's apples and oranges, but.
Or is it Lord of the Rings with respect to games?
Clearly, I'm the minority here because I feel like
knock onto this.
It's a little bit of IP fatigue just from a games perspective in the sense of I think the art style, the look of the game looks very similar, in my opinion, to those old like Two Towers games that came out. It looks very similar and it feels like been there, done that. I can play as Aragorn again and I can play as. But it's not. It's not any of that. This game isn't that.
Is it a movie? But I know it's a totally different story. Is this a movie license or a book license?
It's a book license as far as I know.
I'm not sure. You know, it has a New Line bumper at the beginning.
So it's a movie license, which is why it ends up with the same exact style as the movies and the film games, because those just emulated the style perfectly. If it's got New Line, then they're licensing from New Line related to movies.
Well, number one, they're M-rated for the first time, so they have blood, and it's very violent.
Oh, nice.
And there's nothing held back in that regard. I think the fatigue set in because what happened while EA was making those movie license games was they made movie license games that looked like they ought to be a more action RPG loot kind of like deeper gathering game. And all they really were here's a pretty game engine with the characters you know and love from the movie. Now run through and duplicate the scenes from the movie. Hack, 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 run. Here's the story. You know it. You've read it and you do it again. And like that might have been appealing right while the movie was out. But after a little bit after that, you're like, well, that wasn't very great.
It wasn't very great. And I think this game gets a little rub from that.
So now I think that they've got a great license because the Tolkien world is fantastic. I mean, it's rich. And, if you're going to make that argument, wouldn't you turn that same argument on Skyrim, which looks an awful lot like Oblivion? And has it?
Oblivion was 5 years ago, and I mean, it doesn't look like Oblivion, really. I mean, what are you saying?
I would have to agree with Garden on this.
It doesn't look like Oblivion.
What do you mean? What do you mean? It looks like Oblivion in what sense?
I mean that the art style and the characters, and down to like the guys look really creepy and
ugly.
Ugly.
They're ugly.
Like it still looks like Oblivion. Looks like Oblivion. Come on, dude. Well, we can say great things about Skyrim in here in a minute, but
I'm not trying to be unnecessarily defensive. I can see what you're saying in the sense that it's a sequel to that game, and you're presented in the world in the same way.
So now Snowblind's stuck in this position where, like, why would you say no to Lord of the Rings? Because part of the deal of doing a great game like this is you got to have all this back. Like, they have this wonderful, well thought out fictional canon to work from. They took a small part. I think it was like a paragraph from the beginning of the first book that talks about how Sauron's forces were moving in the north also.
Right.
And they've said, hey, that would be a really cool world to go and build out that fiction. And so they build out that fiction, and they still play on the idea of a fellowship. They still have like three different players. And they still, much like Dark Alliance, they give you those three players are archetypal, and you play them, you tailor them within their archetype to fit the way you want to play them. So, if you're taking the Ranger, you can go like down a dual wheel path, or you can go down like a marksman path. But, you're not going to turn him into something different.
But do you think this game on its face seems like it is a Diablo-style loot game? Because I don't think that that's the impression that it gives.
Well, I think the problem is that it doesn't give a good impression. And that's where I thought you asked about franchise fatigue. Mm-hmm. And my thought about franchise fatigue was that, it does look so similar to those movie games that to the common person, they look at it and go, oh, I just thought it was like another movie game, yeah. and I've already done that, and that's not that cool, and those weren't actually that good in the first place, and so that's a really tough question for them, right? Because that's the number one thing, talking to people around the office, or even actually outside the office, who are like, oh, there's a Lord of the Rings game, is it just another movie? Like, no, it has nothing to do with that.
But I mean, I think like that should be overcomable. It's just the fact that you haven't heard much about it. Like,
that's true.
I don't know for, and I have no idea why that's the case. I don't know if journalists weren't interested, if they didn't have it out there early enough, if the publisher, who knows what reason there is for that. But, you know, if you just don't know what the game is, then your mind is going to see the style or two, three screenshots, see the name and start filling in the details. And unfortunately, you know, you're filling it in as, oh, it's another licensed movie game, or, oh, in this case, it's another, or it's another strategy game, real-time strategy game, when it's totally not one of those things.
So I invite you all to play it. Hopefully you had a chance to play it. It's co-op. It's really, like, the co-op is where it's at its best. And it's obviously designed, like all of the Snowblind games, designed, there's new game plus as soon as you finish it. And as you go back through, it's going to be better loot with more difficult enemies. And it, that's, it is the embodiment of that genre. But then maybe as well as doing the engine, they needed to find something to sort of give that a new twist. I don't know. I love it. But maybe I'm a dinosaur in that regard. Maybe I'm a dinosaur in that regard, because a lot, you know, the biggest complaint that I read online was, well, you know, it comes down to just doing the same thing, you know, beating up all the guys that you're facing as enemies and moving on. I'm like, well, isn't that like a shooter
a red
or anything?
Herring because yeah,
that's what I thought.
Right.
But that's the chief complaint that's leveled at it. And when that's the chief complaint, and then people are saying it's not that great a game.
That's people who are inarticulate about what the thing is that they really don't like about it. It may feel that way when they play it because it doesn't have an engaging mechanic. The world isn't interesting enough. The loot isn't compelling enough to push you forward. Whatever.
But it has all those things. Let me tell you, it has all the things, because the loot is awesome. And I love the fact that, much like great Blizzard games, and I always thought Snowblind was as good at this, is that every piece is really intricately designed. And there's nothing better than like finding a new sword and equipping it immediately, going, oh, that sword looks really badass.
Yeah, I've had that experience lately as well.
Where would you have had that experience? I bet my sword looks more badass than your sword.
Well,
you want to unsheath them and see?
Mine is fully 3D rendered, and I can rotate it in the menus.
I can do that too.
It's so cool.
I can rotate mine in the menus also.
Enchant it, and I can put it on a grindstone and make it sharper. Oh, it's so
cool. What else do you guys do with your swords, huh?
do you use a whetstone for that?
Oh,
I don't even know what that was supposed to
where
be.
Where did we end up? I was
wet stone.
Ugly characters. Ugly characters.
Ariel has a problem with the ugly characters.
I
think they are far less ugly than they were in Oblivion.
And maybe so. But they're still.
So you started
really
with a guy
ugly.
Who looked like a pig, and then you killed him, and you decided, well, okay, this guy only looks like a cow. We'll keep him.
So you're playing Skyrim as well, right?
I've only played like a couple of hours so far, I can't really.
I'm not really allowed to talk about. Too much, but yet, but
I just want to say first, I hate both of you.
I've played a lot of it. I was playing until literally the minute I had to leave for this podcast, and it is all I want to do.
I think one of the things people will be most curious about, Jeff, is what sort of character did you start with this time on this adventure?
I don't know how much I'm allowed to say. I started with an Imperial.
That's conceptually, where are you setting out? What kind of person are you? How did you want to go into it, and how well do you think it's coming along now that you're into it?
See, because the allowing you to the really cool combat system that allows you to mix and match stuff left and right handed, I decided I was going to be a single handed attacker. And my left hand would be a magic.
Okay.
Instead of sword and shield, I'd be sword and magic or mace.
So what used to be like the battle mage?
Yes, and I'm wearing heavy armor. I tend to wear heavy armor, which I'm digging, but I've just started, I had some really cool conjure spells, and I just started conjuring things that will fight for me, and so I've kind of switched things up lately, but...
That's cool. I mean, that's the flexibility of the game, but that's kind of one of the things I'm wondering. So do you find that a distraction, or are you happy with that?
I'm very happy with that. Very happy with that. I mean, I'm tiptoeing around because I'm not allowed to review this yet.
No, you're not reviewing. I mean, we're just talking about the game.
We're just talking about it. And
just
all that
some stories.
Yeah. I'm really pleased with the flexibility. The beautiful elegance of the game is in the menu system, because this is a genre, these epic role-playing games, where you spend your entire life in menus. You're managing your inventory. You're managing your spells. You're switching between things all the time.
And they have found a beautiful way to make that completely painless and allow you to be in and out of those systems quickly and efficiently and not feel like I'm away from the game world in this static menu. I'm in the game world. I'm doing things. I'm able to manage all those. You know, I'm able to say I can use my bow and arrow to start off the fight. And then I can switch quickly to shoot to do some magic. Then I can switch quickly to do something else. It's really dynamic, and it doesn't feel like I'm pausing. Now I'm reselecting. It all keeps moving forward, which is the best part of that system, I think.
I would have to agree with that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, how have you been approaching the game since you're actually in the two-hour point?
Yeah, okay. So I'm actually approaching the game from a different perspective than I think a lot of people will, because I did not get into Oblivion. I played it for a few hours. It just did not suck me in. So I said, okay, well, this isn't for me. But a lot of people love it. You know, that's good. That being said, I was willing to give this a chance. I mean, there's so much hype about this game. It's like I figure I have to play it for at least a couple hours. So just today, actually, I hopped into it, and I want to keep playing. And so that's a good thing.
Sign.
It
won
me over. It won me over. Yeah, I could see myself, you know, putting 50, 80 hours into this game, which is not...
Yeah, that'll be on the low end. About. Low end.
Low end, seriously? God.
Yeah. This game, for me, speaking of my own hype for it, is the game that I know is going to ruin the month of November and December. And this, along with Zelda, I think, are the two that I'm most excited for in the next couple weeks.
They're saying 100 hours in Zelda.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. If you do all the side quests,
yeah,
I've heard
if you
like
do everything.
I've heard like 40 to 50, like
still a lot.
Campaign. Mm-hmm. And the fact Jeff was sitting here earlier and he's like, all I want to do is play Skyrim. And I have Zelda sitting there. I'm like, I hate you even more, Jeff. Like, go to hell. Like, I'll take your Zelda for you while you finish Skyrim. How's that? But I mean, no, like that's the type of game. Like you're sitting there plotting out right now, where's my time going to be to put 50 to 100 hours into Oblivion and also time into Zelda? But that's what I'm really excited about now, is just carving out every night for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. There's so much richness to the world. There was a little moment. I'll do my weekly story.
Jeff's story from Skyrim.
Skyrim Story Hour. I'm not allowed to talk about stuff, so there's going to be no spoilers here. This is just a random occurrence that happened. I was walking down a pathway heading to a town, and I happened to see on the right side of my...
I happened to spy.
Yeah. I saw a flash of what looked like fire, like way off in the distance, like off down
over there.
A completely different side path area away from the town. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go investigate what that is, because that looks crazy. It looks like something's on fire. And I walk down the path, and I come upon two mages battling each other, just like a fire mage and a frost mage attacking each other on the road.
Now, most people would be wise enough to let the mages just, you know, have their time alone, enjoy that special moment.
They clearly had a quarrel.
Enjoy that special moment.
Yeah.
But not Jeff, probably.
No, I stepped in and started swinging. I was like,
who did you attack?
Both mages die. Actually, as I approached, one of them won and killed him, and he turned and looked at me, and then it started running toward me, and so I dispatched him. Post haste.
Are you sure he wasn't going to like give you a quest or something? Or?
He may have. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff like that where like a guy who would have been a quest, meets my wrath. could happen. I just love that I happened upon something that was happening in the world and it was way away. And I walked over there and checked it out and it wasn't a big moment. It just was happening.
Wasn't that something they were like, I mean, I think going back to Oblivion, I remember reading the interviews where they were, that was something they really have been trying hard to do since that game, where it's like, you know, oh, if they get hungry, they'll go hunt the deer or something, but then, you know, someone hunts the deer and then all the city guards turn on him, or like, I remember like crazy ass stories from the development of Oblivion where they actually had to dumb it down because too many crazy things would happen that would break the game if they turned it up all the way.
That's really cool. I mean,
but again, my problem, and this is what I'm going to find out as I get into Skyrim in the coming weeks, is whether or not all of those things become too much of a distraction from the main quest line. See, it's one thing to sit here and think about, like we talked earlier about this, and this is why I wanted to come back to it in Skyrim, is that that's great to have all those things, but do you actually get that lovely chef's meal of the story?
I never finished Oblivion.
Okay.
But I put like 40 hours into it, and sure. I was perfectly satisfied with what I got out of Oblivion with some like the Thief's Guild. So I don't think you have to necessarily have the main quest be that meaty chunk if there's enough great meals. You know, like it's a smorgasbord of restaurants, that game, and you can go over here and try this restaurant, and you can go over here and try this restaurant.
I'm not disagreeing. I mean, obviously, you know, one of the points that I think is overlooked a lot of times is video games aren't books and they're not movies, and like I think that's perfectly valid. I think it's entirely valid to say, hey, you know what, I really enjoyed playing the game and I played what I wanted to out of it. But I think it's also a little disappointing, like artistically, to say, yeah, but you know what, the core story wasn't good enough to keep me involved and keep me down, you know, like building my character and finishing it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not that guy. I put 100 hours into Oblivion. I did finish it. These are the games that I am a gamer for. This is I live and breathe these kinds of experiences, and they're too few and far between for me. But I find, I mean, I one little tip that I would give is you know, buy the clairvoyance spell early on, because it's basically a how do I get to my next destination, and you get to select what your destination is. You know, how do I get to my next plot point? So if you just want to go plot point to plot point to plot point, you can play the game that way. But they do such a fantastic job of placing the next major plot point along a road where there is a town or township or city that you pass through that has all kinds of interesting stuff going on. And so on your way to these things, you will encounter new storylines and new things that come up. And I think the quest log system does a really great job of differentiating what's a major quest, what's a minor quest, you know, what's important, what isn't. They've learned so many things, I think, in how to communicate that information to the player and make it easy. Fast travel system, once you, you know, one way to approach these games is to just explore for a long time, find everything on the map, and then when you start attacking the plot per se, you can just fast travel everywhere you need to go. That's not how I like to play, but I think there are enough options that you really don't have to have that be an impediment to your enjoyment of the game. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So also then, with so much development options as far as your character, like the question I didn't really get a clear picture of this. You started off thinking you're going to be like sword in one hand, spell in the other.
Well, I started off thinking I was going to be sword and shield, because sword and shield is kind of cool.
Okay.
But then I love magic so much, and you know, I wanted to be able to attack with both my magic and my sword.
It's like your first year in college. You're like, I'm just going to go general.
I'm going to go general humanities and change my major. But the progression system is brilliant too, because you're not earning experience points per se. You're leveling up your skills by using them. And when you use your skill, when you level up enough skills, then you go up to the next major level in the game. So everything you're doing is contributing to moving forward, whether it's trading with someone, selling something to someone, picking locks, mm-hmm. attacking someone with magic or swords, even getting hit on your armor levels up your armor. And they do, I mean, I haven't tested this to know that this is absolutely true, but it feels like it's difficult to trick the system, to game the system. Like if you just wander around in sneak mode all the time, you don't level up your sneak. You have to actually be sneaking by somebody in order to level up your sneak.
Nice.
Which I remember Todd actually talking about that at the Bethesda thing earlier this year. I'm going to pull up my notes, which I have in here someplace, while I ask you this other question, which is that now that you're in like say 15, 20 hours, what would you say, like, how much, like, have you been pulled down? So you've started creating your character. You, like, go through this, I'm going to be a sword and shield. Oh, no, you don't want to be sword and magic. And so you start to get this idea in your head of, like, who your character is. I think that's starting to gel some, it sounds like,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And as it's starting to gel, how much do you find then that you're being pulled to just go adventure in the world versus how much do you feel that you're on the storyline? What sort of balance are you striking and how's the game managing that with you?
With these kinds of games, I tend to be very systematic. And I really want to experience everything. And so I tend to try to finish all the quests in one area before I go to the next area. And so I'm drawn into each story moment, but I love doing the thing that I just described, which is I'm on my way someplace. I pass through a town. I wander into the inn in that town and somebody explains to me something that's going on and I deal with that. I mean, I literally did that right before I came here today is I solved the murder mystery, you know? Like, it's freaking awesome. That's not what I set out to do. I was on my way to another quest, but because it was interesting and it drew me into that story moment, I did that thing. And that's what I love is these kinds of games. I'm I'm within the narrative bounds that they've established, but within that, I'm generating my own narrative. This is my story of how I went through this world. And it's so much more interesting, I think, because it is that refrain that I keep going back to. Choices, choices, choices. It's me being creative in that world and going, oh, this is what I'm going to do now, you know?
What we're going to do right now is take a little break so that you can check out Simon Jane's Last Exit from 44th and Filth. And when we come back on the other side, we got a little news, we got a little listener feedback, we got finishing moves, and then my unsuccessful football picks from last week. Oh, chuckle it up. Anyway, this is Simon Jane's Last Exit. Exit from Simon Jane on the 44th and Filth label. Thanks very much for sharing that with us, guys. We will have in the show notes all of the details, of course, of where you can get that digitally on the internets, where you can check it out on YouTube. There's a video they just put up. So let's see, guys, what do you want to talk about? I got some new stuff here to roll through real quickly. As we talked about at the very top of the show, we've talked a bunch about portable games. We talked a little bit about tower defense games, which have been a mainstay of inexpensive 99 cents and $1.99 iPad and Android and iOS games. The 3DS is going to get its first $50 game.
Heyo, Macarena.
Capcom's Resident Evil Revelations will be $50 because evidently it needs a 4 GB card. Here is the
and those quote. Aren't cheap. Oh, wait, they are extremely cheap.
A Capcom representative told Kotaku in an email, "A true console experience on a handheld device, Resident Evil Revelations is an epic title that offers both a single-player campaign for that classic survival horror gaming experience and an additional raid mode that can be played cooperatively or single-player, cooperatively or single-player. To handle all of that data, Resident Evil Revelations requires a 4GB cartridge, resulting in a higher price point."
Can I say something about this?
I think you're about to.
I'm not saying that a $50 price tag is not ridiculous for this game. But compared to the price of games that we usually pay in Japan, this is silly. that this is not that expensive at all.
Interesting.
This is actually de rigueur for a DS game in Japan. Like the second... actually, I don't know what the title was in English, but it was the second spin-off of the Phoenix Wright game that involved Mitsurugi, or Edgeworth, sorry, in English, Edgeworth. That was like 6,000, 7,000 yen when it came out. And convert that into dollars, geez, ridiculous.
It's like $70, right?
Well, at least.
Well,
it
was.
Yeah. Years ago. It's more expensive now.
I don't know anything.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
The dollar is tanking again. The yen's like the strongest currency right now, or one of them.
Well, okay, so, and, you know, when we had the discussion about the cost of, cumulative cost of a game with DLC, many of our European listeners and our Australian listeners pointed out how
it's always
expensive.
The Australians who are always sending the angry tweets of like, how dare you complain?
They get really worked.
And then they put a shrimp on the Barbie and I'm like, I'm jealous of you, sir.
Open up Foster's for you.
Does this...
Wow. Does
this comparative analysis, though, make it okay?
No, I mean, it
doesn't. That's fine that it is really expensive there, but I'm not sure that validates it.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't.
You know, I don't know what the hard cost that Nintendo charges for those cards are. And, you know, obviously, like, when you think about the game, you think it's a 25% increase in the price of the game from what you would expect a $40 price to be. I don't know what they actually have to budget for paying for that card versus the 4GB card. So maybe there is some truth to that. Nintendo may jack the prices up. Who knows? But, I mean, I don't know. Are you into that? Is that the game that costs the slide pad, too? Is that in Japan?
The Frankenstick is... you can play with the Frankenstick. You can play with it.
I think somebody windows that to Halloween.
Really? Frankenstick?
You mean the ashtray? I still like the ashtray. Give that up to. I think the 8-4 guys were who coined that.
Yeah, yeah. Am I the only one who's actually played this game before?
Is this the one that's just the shooting mode?
No.
What is that one called?
We're talking about Mercenaries.
That's the only one I've tried.
Okay, so I actually demoed this at TGS, and I was not particularly impressed. The graphics are great. It's a beautiful game. I'm not gonna lie. It had some intense moments, but it was thoroughly unimpressive. The enemies just were bland. This bland.
Resident
Evil game
point.
Has price point. I don't know. Resident Evil aren't zombies bland enemies? Period.
Well, they weren't even like real zombies. They
or
were, like,
is it like
gray
those
dudes.
Infected guys now or whatever?
They were gray dudes that gray. Just came at you. One guy has like these huge arms that have like spikes or something on them that he like kind of bats you around with them.
But it's in three dizzles, right? That's
it's
something.
Three dizzles.
No glasses.
No,
if you break down how dollar to dizzle. I think it's a bargain.
since you played it, what is the game then?
I'm curious. It's Resident Evil.
Does it tie into this?
The thing that they added was they put in this scanner, which like is a totally new.
Let me guess. It uses the gyroscope and you hold it up?
No, you actually don't. It's not. Oh. I wonder if you can actually use the gyroscope, but I did not. It's just in game. You put on a scanner and you can scan your environment to look for hidden items. So
Boy,
this
that
can
really
be like
sounds like a gyroscope moment.
It's. But it's not exactly a new concept to games.
Yeah.
And for it just completely stopped the action, honestly. I mean, I did have kind of a scary moment where I was just scanning the room. I thought I was all clear, and I was scanning the room, and all of a sudden this creature comes out from behind the or underneath the table and jumped out at me, and that kind of scared me. But
that's fun.
I don't know. I could pass. And this is coming from a big Resident Evil fan.
Oh, are you a big Resident Evil fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
One thing before we move on, the price. I did see someone posted recently that there's a bunch of new dates and titles in GameStop system. I think I saw this on Gaff. for 3DS, and the new Layton game was listed, but it was listed with a $44.99 MSRP.
Ruh-roh.
So I don't
trend
know.
Confirmed.
Could be. I don't, like I said, that was just one post.
One's
someone,
a fluke.
I don't know.
One's a fluke. Two's a trend. Three's
so,
a problem.
So you may start to see 3DS games that could be people just trying to get their more money out of the people that actually do have 3DSs, because if you have one, you probably have money.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't. I don't see that working that well. I mean, Nintendo just posted a loss, and they're like all up in arms about what do we do next. And then the answer is we're going to sell you a more expensive portable game for a system that hasn't sold all that well yet. That we're not happy with it. I mean, they sold well initially, but then it cooled. And
here's my silver lining take is that I love the fact that there's a developer who's aiming to differentiate their game from 99-cent portable handheld on my phone stuff. That they're like, we want to deliver to you a console experience. It's okay. Unfortunate that it comes with a console price tag, but I applaud that effort in trying to say, hey, these dedicated game machines.
How well does that work for PSP?
Not so well.
Well, one thing I think we should also consider here is the fact that the yen is so strong right now. And, you know, there's a huge market over here. And if you want to sell games in America, even if you sell a ton of copies, you might not make any money off of it.
Well, sure. We just saw Sony also post an operating loss. And, you know, although they explained, you know, some about how, we have problems with our LCD television sales department. And we took a price cut on the PS3 to sell it to increase sales. Reality is a big part of their problem is that instead of getting 100 yen for the dollar, they're getting 80. Mm-hmm. You suddenly lost 20% of your income. And especially if you're measuring in yen, that's a problem.
And when, you know, US and Europe are your two big markets, and those are the markets that you're gaining a ton of strength against. That's rough.
So without getting down to the pins and needles then of the exact dollars and yens and all that, the layer that they're coming in at, regardless, is awfully high.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm sitting here like holding an iPad in my hand, and so this was a topic of discussion also on Bonus Round. We were talking about, you know, the Vita and will it be successful in the 3DS and where it is. And, you know, one of the things that came up a lot about Vita has been the form factor. Right. You know, are we like it's not quite portable. It's a big thing. Well, this the iPad's not portable. It certainly hasn't hurt it any that this.
Well, that's not how I use it. I don't take my iPad out of my home.
That's right. Yeah. Unless you're going on a trip, maybe. And then, you know.
Yeah. Maybe for the plane. Yeah.
Right. Whereas, you know, you might take your 3DS with you to like somewhere, convention, something.
Okay.
Or, you know, on the bus or whatever. Like, and maybe I guess you had a bus ride or you use mass transit. You might carry a bag and an iPad. But you certainly can't carry an iPad without a bag if you're going to go on like buses and things like that.
Well,
you wouldn't want to.
The difference is an iPad does what my laptop or my desktop do. But it's far more convenient for me at home. But a handheld gaming device does what my home console does, but it's not more convenient and it doesn't do it as well. So that, you know,
it's specialized to the places where you don't have access to your home console. You rarely,
exactly.
Unless it's a crazy good game, you're not going to sit on your couch at home and play on your, you know, 3DS or your PlayStation.
Exactly. So whereas I'm using my iPad as a home device, I think the utility of the portable gaming console is its portability. That's what it's for, is to take it out and about. So if you have something that is awkward to take out and about, I think it's a false comparison to say, well, it didn't hurt the iPad. It's like, well, that's not how I use my iPad. That's not what I bought it for.
A lot of people wouldn't use their iPad.
Yeah. I think a lot of people carry... I think there are folks who carry iPads, but I think that maybe... to extend the argument that they carry them in replacement of where they would have carried a laptop.
Right. Well, I would concur with that, but I'm just saying, like, you wouldn't go out to dinner and have your iPad in your coat or something, you know, like, you know, like you wouldn't go to Disneyland with your iPad where you might, you know, bring a DS so you can play a game
you
in
might.
Line. You know,
I suppose you might do that so you could play a game in line. Okay.
Let's go to Disneyland.
Yeah, let's go. Oh, you have another Disneyland fan?
I have my season pass. Let's go.
Hey, me too.
I want to go to Disneyland.
We could jump in the car right now.
We should.
Okay, well, we've beaten that horse quite a bit. I'm still concerned about the price creep on portable games. You know, one of the theories that I threw out the other day on Bonus Round for Vita is that, you know, it's fine to go for like these great rich experiences, but it's more than the price that's prohibitive. It's the way you use it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you're talking about, like in our society. We don't have stretches where we're going to sit down with a portable device on transportation or out in public or whatever doing something. Like we have that time. We're probably at home with our surround sound television and all that kind of stuff. And so that appeal's not there. I think that they need something that both fits the way you would play and gives you a compelling reason to keep your Vita or your, or it could work with DS, around with you. And, you know, one of the options that to me would make sense would be to have a subscription game service.
Meaning what? That you are buying a subscription to a service that allows you to play X number of games all the time?
Different sorts of games. You know, they've played around with these PSP, with the PlayStation Minis.
Yeah.
Which didn't really catch fire for them. And I think that's because there wasn't a... Because it wasn't like a tie-in. Like, you know, like you weren't carrying your PSP around like you carry your phone around. So you weren't seeing the value in buying the 99-cent game, because the 99-cent game is a bite-sized experience. You were saying, oh, well, I'm going to buy a $40 game for my PSP if I buy a game, because I'm going to get my PSP out. I'm going to sit down and play a long experience because I have to make it an event to pull it out anyway.
I don't see how a subscription service is a better notion from a consumer standpoint because than if an a la carte model.
Because what if I was say, what if I said, okay, what if for $10 a month you have access to all of the games that this, whatever this crop or this stable of original indie spirited PlayStation Vita game developers develop,
right?
So like a Sound Shapes.
Are they going to do
maybe someone like a Pixel Junk does some sort of game that they're updating regularly, and maybe someone like a Housemarque does a game that they're updating regularly. And for whatever, for $10 a month, you've got these games, and some cycle in and some cycle out. But you know that every time you pick up your PSP for your $10 a month in your subscription, that you're going to have some cool games to play with it that are ostensibly pop in and pop out games, but they are also games you're going to play for a long time, and you're going to have them for a long time.
I feel like there would have to be a tremendous number of games in that pipeline in order to make that worth
really?
My while. Yeah.
Like a dozen?
Am
like
I going to spend 10?
Dozen and a half good ones wouldn't be enough?
Per month? You think there'd be a dozen of those games a month?
What if they just had a dozen to a dozen and a half of them and they were being updated?
Then let me buy the six or seven that I like for a few $5 a piece.
They're not just $5 a piece. I mean, actually, I was looking at this because somehow or other... It's really weird. I turned on my PS3 last night, and we were talking about games, and I wanted to show off Super Stardust. And so we fire it up, and it's like needs to update to version 6.0. And like for some reason, it was crashing out. It wouldn't update to version 6.0.
Oh, there's a good argument for the subscription service. Now I'm paying for it to crash out after.
So I deleted it, thinking I was just going to go and reinstall it. But for some reason, it's not listed on my purchase history, so it's just like gone. And I'm like, okay, well, this totally sucks. Now that actually is a great argument for subscription service because you're
inept at keeping track of what I've purchased and not purchased. Let me pay you more money per month so that you can maybe get better at that.
No, because nothing would be locked. If I had a subscription, it all would be available to me, and I'd just pick re-download it. It wouldn't have to stay. It wouldn't have to know, oh, you bought this or oh, you didn't. The fact that it wouldn't have lost that flag. You know what I'm saying? It would just be there. I would just get it again. And by the way, I went and looked. It's still $10. And if I want the add-on pack, it's still another $5. It's still $15 to replace. It's $15 to replace it. I'm not going to spend another $15 to replace it.
See, I would rather spend $10 or $15 a month to like have access to all the Nintendo and Super Nintendo games or something on my 3DS.
Yeah,
like that to me would be more interesting than like 10 or 15 small games. Like if someone wanted to say, that's a different approach. Sure, library titles. Like maybe if I paid $10 a month or $15 a month to be able to download any PlayStation 1 game I wanted and be able to play it on my PSP on the go. Like those are the type of things. If you had a big enough library, but I think you're gonna have to do it with library games more than new games, because I don't know where the model is to.
Maybe that's the right approach, James. You know, I'm just trying to throw some ideas against the wall and see what sticks, because I think that either 3DS or Vita just trying to produce expensive games that are portable and the portable devices is not going to be a successful strategy. It hasn't
what about
proven
this?
Successful
what about this
PSP.
Idea? What about this crazy idea? Crazy idea. Crazy.
Okay.
What if you spend $15 a month and they give you the hardware for free, like a phone?
Okay.
So that I'm buying a subscription, I'm buying a 2-year commitment to Vita, and I get the hardware for free, and games will be coming out on it. It's basically like a phone
subsidized, and like, that's a good idea. That's another idea. It's another possibility. I mean, I think that the problem there is that the cell phone model doesn't have the development cost of a game against it. It only has the maintenance and operation of a network. So you know, they're just operating and maintaining a network, which admittedly has some cost to it, but the core cost of operation every day is not as high as paying studios to make games, which is much more expensive than just maintaining the infrastructure once it's built out. But
across the amount of users. But I do
yeah,
think,
exactly.
I think the secondary challenge, too, is it's just hard to get people to carry something else.
True.
The whole phone and smartphone revolution has been because we're consolidating our phone, our music player, and our camera into one device that does all those things better than even before. And so I think that, you know, it could be that the game system and being able to play console experiences is the next thing to get rolled into that as well.
Could
and
be.
The long term you may – I mean, the problem is that with everything being straight touchscreen, it's really hard to bring that home because you really want like dual analog and good buttons that provide tactile feedback. But rolling all that in, I mean, there's more than enough power to pull off a lot of the same stuff you're seeing, at least on the 3DS. Vita is probably, you know, another step forward power-wise. But, I mean, I think that's the long-term evolution is that, you know, the hardcore games are going to be on the phone.
Well, to me, 3DS, I mean, and I've said this before, I don't like the form factor of 3DS. I don't think it's a particularly impressive piece of hardware. I don't think the lenticular 3D is all that great. I find it kind of annoying and... And in general, the screens are small. I mean, they're even smaller than the screen on an iPhone. I mean, come on. That's a competitive disadvantage, although they have great content in games they can plug into it, which I get. But the Vita is really powerful. I mean, having played around with it, I can say that I can comfortably say that, wow, you know, like playing games on this thing is a significant noticeable difference over anything, including iPad, as far as, you know, control and what it can put on the screen and what can be done with it. But then... I'm in that same camp of like having played Drake's and going, I was not going to play a Drake's game. I probably want to play Drake's on, you know, probably want to play Uncharted on my television at home. It's tough. It's really tough. Like, this is a really tough dilemma.
Yep.
All right. Let's leave it. There was a dilemma for developer Piranha Games, who was working on the MechWarrior reboot. It was about 2009 when they first showed the trailer that was going to of the idea of bringing back MechWarrior, was a very beloved franchise. Unfortunately, what happened there to them, and this is an interesting look into the intricacies of licensing and what brings what to your consoles, and then exactly how much future there still remains to be in console exclusives, because they were unable to get support for doing a console MechWarrior reboot because Microsoft's licensing with FASA precluded there being a PS3 version of any MechWarrior games, and thus no publishers would want to get behind it. Developer Piranha Games owner Brian Ekman explained it, that in the end, it was mostly the lack of PS3 option that did us in. The scope and budget required to develop a console reboot needed the support of a PS3 SKU, and we just couldn't convince developers to take a risk.
Single console future. Argument right there.
By late fall 2009, our dreams of making a MechWarrior game began slowly drifting away. Through the end of 2009 and 2010, we rallied numerous times, reducing scope and budget, but repitching the concept as an Xbox Live-only title even. In the end, nothing stuck.
It's a nice argument for a single console future, but it's just not feasible. Because, I mean, there's too much. I mean, again, you're going back to two companies. Like you were talking about selling, you know, the PSP on a contract or at a subsidy. PS3 and Xbox were sold at subsidy for a long time.
It's true.
And then they make the money back on licensing the games. And the exclusive games are the ones that are the system sellers and the, you know, the big productions with a lot of marketing behind them. And
how many of them actually are system sellers anymore?
Not many, I would think. Halo, maybe Uncharted.
Yeah.
You know, those certainly are, you know, Gears of War probably to a certain aspect. But as you said, you know, you're going to reboot an old franchise that has some, you know, I think some of us who are older have a lot of affinity for MechWarrior. But at the same token, like, giant mech game, you know, like, could be good, but is anyone going to take the risk on just Xbox when there's a lot of your sales being left behind, especially when you look at Europe? Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw the story recently, like worldwide shipments are almost equal at this point. So if you ship on Xbox...
Isn't PS3 ahead now, actually?
It's
back and forth.
They're so close, it's probably like within the statistical error, you know, if there's enough Red Ring Xboxes out there that wouldn't count anymore towards their total. But
there's some broken 60 gig PS3s too,
be fair. Sure, maybe not as many though.
Mine's been repaired, but I was glad I got it back at 60 gig.
So... regardless, but again, you're asking a publisher to fund a game that you're only going to sell to half the market.
Right.
And that's, to them, like, when you're looking at that money, I can fund that game that's going to sell the aftermarket, or I can fund this game over here that's going to sell the full market. Where the hell do you think that money's going to go, despite the affinity for MechWarrior? It's going to go to Project B.
Yeah, that's really sad to see this happen, but at the same time, you know, I know this isn't a perfect world.
on a positive note, though, I'm really excited for Project B.
Yeah, Project B is going to be fantastic.
I think it's going to be amazing.
Project B. That's nice. That's nice. You just completely derailed my train of thought. Anyway, MechWarrior is coming back as a free-to-play game. It's going to be coming out in 2012, and hopefully we'll have some information forthcoming on a beta. One of the things that's also interesting about the system-selling nature of console games is that something that platform holders have caught on to, and especially Microsoft has caught on to, is that they don't need an exclusive anymore necessarily to sell consoles. I think that, you know, games like Assassin's Creed will sell consoles this fall, and certainly Modern Warfare 3 will be a console-selling game. And I think you could say that there's been a sort of chilling effect on Microsoft's game support and game development by virtue of them knowing that they're pretty much thought of as the Call of Duty / Modern Warfare box.
Really? You think that?
I don't know. I think it's just been, like, directed in different energy, you know? Yeah. So, like, I mean, Kinect,
Launched
I think.
Kinect,
right.
Exactly.
Kinect, there's a ton of resources. I'm sure.
Really? Because this year, Kinect is, I feel like it's the same Kinect as last year. It's another sports game, and it's sequels to their two big games, and that's it.
Well, this year. My guess to you is that they didn't expect, I'm guessing they didn't think Kinect was going to be as big as it turned out to be. And my guess was that, that would be my assumption.
Really? I think they were
still taken aback.
Dude, they doubled down on it.
Mm. They doubled down on it, but even then, like, you know, you don't, until it's, I'm sure that that point, when they started getting those numbers, that's when they finally really putting more resources into developing more games.
I can believe that it definitely spurred more money into development
of
those
games. That's my point, is that there's a shit ton more money that came in early this year, and you haven't seen those games yet, and that's what all their resources are going to, is developing more Kinect stuff.
Can't wait. I can't wait to see some Kinect stuff.
Really?
That's what I'm gonna say. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, why?
Because I think that the Kinect can offer some unique experiences.
She's just excited about the Disneyland game.
No. You can fly.
And Dance Central too.
Well, yeah, Dance Central too. At the same time, you know, I understand that not everyone's going to be into that. I mean, I do know that some developers are not enthused by how restrictive the Kinect can be and are more interested in, you know, the next evolution of the Kinect to see what, like, how you can really push that peripheral.
Can you give me a little more idea what you mean by that?
I'd prefer to remain vague.
Oh, are you vague?
I prefer to remain vague. I'm going to remain vague. But I think that, I mean,
just talking pig Latin.
Kinect 2 for sure has got to be in development with that. I don't know anything about that. But my instinct tells me that they are developing
the
latest and greatest
Xbox,
thing.
Right? It's just the next Xbox.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
You know.
No, I don't. I really have nothing
to do with Xbox 4D.
I have nothing to do with
I think Kinect is something that Microsoft wants to use organization-wide. So I think that's going to be, yeah. I mean, whatever that
right,
next
evolution.
Right,
it's in Windows 8,
that,
right?
Right, whatever that next evolution of the technology is more accurate, more refined. I think that, for certainly, I mean, Microsoft
I think
has
that's
to
fine.
Be investing in it.
Yes. It's going to be great. Whatever it is, whatever they're working on, whatever the next evolution is, it is going to spur. It's going to get developers who maybe thought that, oh, this Kinect thing, it looks kind of cool, but it just basically tricks you into
True
thinking
believer.
It knows. It knows.
Kool-Aid drink.
But I think when the next evolution comes out, developers are going to catch on to it and be more motivated to produce Kinect titles.
But not in this evolution.
I think that people are going to be drinking the punch if there's money behind it.
I'm worried because, you know, it's like once bitten, twice shy kind of thing from the public standpoint, right? Because everybody rushed out and bought Wii's.
Yep.
And then everybody rushed out and bought the Kinect.
Oh, people are going to do it.
You think you think so?
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a chance that people can be re-sparked if the right software title comes out
but
that
that's the
gets
whole,
them back into
That's
it.
The whole point I'm trying to make is that everybody rushed out and bought a Wii, and then it was we're not really making any games on that anymore.
But people kept buying Wii's.
And then rushed out and bought the Kinect.
They never
and
were
like,
making games on that platform.
And
they never were.
I know. And who's making any? What are the Kinect games? It's like, oh, you know, the next thing you guys buy, that's what we'll make stuff for. It's like, no, but we all bought this, hoping that you would make stuff for it.
Do you want to just dance? I want to play Dance Central 2 is what I want.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess that's what people bought it for.
Has anyone played Gunstringer? Has anyone? Has yeah. Kind of
I mean, that's the game that always comes up whenever we talk about it. It's like,
oh, but there's Gunslinger.
Gunslinger's good.
Well, but I think that Gunstringer plays to the point that I have, which is I'm unconvinced that there are more than a few ideas out there for which motion gaming really makes a lot of sense, because designers have been plugging away at it now for years, and we come back to the same things, places where we can pantomime real world and have fun with it. And there's only a few physical things that we want to pantomime and have fun with. There is dancing, works great. There is these sports games, those work great. And so, you know, who would have thought it, but evidently playing with a marionette is also kind of fun, and that works pretty well. But once you get past that, the whole, like, the pantomiming analogy, then where do you go? Like, what works? Have you seen Steel Battalion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Steel Battalion is interesting because there it's bringing the Kinect into a hybrid control scheme where you're playing the game with a controller, and then you're using the Kinect functionality to do the auxiliary things like moving around the cabin and then grabbing dudes and pulling them back in and slapping them and, you know, dealing with their battle fatigue. I'm just not sure that feels to me like you're trying to use something someone gave you because they told you, all right. You know, it's like you've just been handed an assignment and, Jeff, here's your crate in Chopped and you have to build dinner for me out of this, this, and this, and the Kinect.
Yeah, I know. I feel like we have the same conversation every week about this, but I'm slowly moving toward the opinion that it's not going to be about controlling anything with Kinect. It's more going to be about Kinect watching me play and affecting the game based on what it sees.
That's cool. Actually, I guess I hadn't really heard you articulate that like that, but I like that. It's a good idea.
I mean, that's the more games that I – because I got really excited originally about – you know, the idea of not having a controller in your hand and figuring out ways to interact with the game. But the more games that I play based on that, like you say, it's a very limited palette from which that fun is derived. But I think the technology is interesting in that I've always looked at my video games and now they can look back and there's got to be something to be mined from that ability. And you know, to have a game be able to, I mean, I hope we get to the point where it can check out my facial expression, you know. And if we have these games where we can like talk to characters, you know, Mass Effect.
You know what you made me think of? Did you ever play Rockstar's Manhunt with the headphones?
Right. Yes. And where creepy as fuck.
And if you had it on and you didn't realize it at
and
first,
and you breathed or and you, made
like,
a sound,
you, like, and you like and something happened, you went, yeah, they would fucking hear you.
Yeah.
And that was like the first time I realized, I was like, oh shit, I actually have to control my emotional responses to deal with the game. Okay,
and I think that
you
that's
just sold
fucking...
me on you sold me on a new Kinect thing, right? You sold there. Me a new Kinect thing right there.
Also, that's what the vitality sensor was going to be.
Sony just patented something like that. I think there was a whole thing where they patented a controller. There was just in the news this week where they patented a controller that has like vitality sensors built into it or something like that to detect your heartbeat and other things, which I thought was interesting.
You sold me on that. Maybe you should have saved that, but you didn't. You're still going to have to come up with something new because as we close out the show, you got to get us with your finishing moves, which is what we're going to have now.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
Yeah. Ladies first.
Aw, thank you. Okay, so I'm just going to keep this short and sweet. Phoenix Wright movie, yes, please. I want it now.
You don't have any objections to
No
that?
Objections here.
Can you give me the explanation?
It's anime. Is it anime? Or?
No. Real actors.
What? Effects.
Yeah.
Who plays Phoenix Wright in your perfect world? Go.
No. Well, I'm just thinking of the Japanese actor who is Hiroki Narimiya, who's great.
Yeah, obvious choice.
Oh, yeah.
Love him. Like, yeah. Amazing.
And Takumi Saito, who...
Of course.
plays Edgeworth.
Obviously, it'll either be him or Ben Affleck.
No. Although it does kind of look like cosplay, the guy. Yeah. It does look like cosplay, kind of, but I think it's going to be great fun. I can't wait to see it.
All right. Awesome. James?
We didn't get to talk about this, but the new Rainbow Six was announced
yes,
today.
It was.
And Game Informer has it on their cover issue. But the coolest thing they had was like the previz video that apparently they had reason to believe was going to be leaked. So they like structured a video around it and gave it to Game Informer of what they're hoping the game feels like. And if you haven't watched this yet... Go watch it.
I haven't watched it.
I haven't either.
not to spoil it too much, but like essentially it's counterterrorism. They're on a bridge. It kind of feels like Heavy Rain, where like there's buttons in the environment, very story heavy. But this guy, you start as a guy in his house. He gets abducted. He has a suicide vest. He's supposed to go to Times Square or his wife will get killed. The Rainbow Six guys are up on the bridge. They're fighting against terrorists. And then this guy's running towards the end of the bridge, trying to get to Times Square to save his wife and family. The cops show up and are trying to kill him. And they get the order to like shoot the cops. And you have to like shoot the cops in the knees. So they go down, get to the guy. Then his cell phone starts ringing on. Like, oh shit. Like he's got a remote detonator. Like, what do we do? And they're like, we're out of time. And they're like, sorry, dude. And they push him off the fucking bridge. And you see him falling off the bridge. And then it comes out. And it's like Rainbow Six. And it's like, holy hell. Like, totally awesome.
Just you telling me that story, I was excited.
Yeah,
so.
it looks really cool. Go check that out. And I'm super, super stoked after watching that video. Totally sold me right off the bat. I can't wait to read the article.
Wow. That's awesome.
That does sound awesome.
That does sound awesome. What do you think, Mr. Kanata?
I mentioned this on another podcast, but I want to bring it up here. I think I'm wondering if I'm the only one that does this. My favorite save system in any kind of game is where you can save anywhere and then it takes a screenshot of your game as to show you, you know, so you can select when you load. And I Skyrim does that, so I have it on the brain. When I have that kind of save system in a game, I'm always framing beautiful pictures for my save games. Does anybody else do that?
I do not do that. I'm sure there's someone else out there. There's one guy. There's one guy who does it.
If you are that guy, please comment in the comment section so I don't feel like such a jackass.
Whole new levels of OCD.
However, yeah, whole new levels, exactly. Although you did somehow make me think of Bob Ross when you did that thing.
Now,
pretty little trees.
No, you know what we do? Clouds. We have those like checkpoints in our games, right? Someone does have to go through and like take, you know, a little screen of which checkpoint.
Yeah.
Someone has to fucking go through and take a screen of each of those things, and there's like 100 screens, and you take like 10 for each shot.
So in turn.
Like 1,000 screen. Well, yeah, or one of my guys. And there's like 1,000 screens and they go through and change them.
Jesus.
So, but yeah, so
move
someone does.
Move slightly to the right, take another picture, move slightly
right,
to the right.
Give me 10 different versions so the art director can pick the best one. Yeah.
Mine's real simple. Voxatron headlines the Humble Voxatron debut bundle right now at humblebundle.com. If you know what a Voxatron is, it's this very, very cool indie game that I got to see a couple times over the past 6 months that is a third-person shooting run-around action game done all in voxels. And they're calling it an alpha, but it already has even a level creator in it. And it is freaking awesome, and you should go get this, especially considering they've added Blocks That Matter and The Binding of Isaac to this bundle. So if you have not, we promoted the Humble Indie Bundles before. It is humblebundle.com. You get to choose how much you pay for it.
At
least go for the base amount, which is $15. You get to also choose how to divide the money across the developers, charity, and the Humble Bundle people. Do play the developers, obviously, and definitely you should give in a little bit to Humble Tip because obviously they're running this whole operation and they need a little money to survive. The two charities you could support are Child Supply and
Child Supply.
And the Electronic Frontier Foundation, both good causes, but I mean, you know, you can't beat this. Three games, like 15, 25 bucks. Come on, hop in there. They're great. They're awesome. You will love them. Thanks to Simon Jane and 44th and Filth for Last Exit, which we will have full information on how you can get the digital download online in the show notes on shacknews.com. Thanks to Jeff Kanata, as always, from the Totally Rad Show.
Yep.
Anything you want to advise people to watch in the next week?
My show, actually.
No,
every
single day. Anything great coming up?
I think Zav's going to be on Talking Skyrim with us.
Talking Skyrim.
And we're going to do Skyrim next week, so check out that.
Awesome.
Thank
you to the lovely Ariel Angelotti from Q Games, where you can right now on the PlayStation Network pick up a side scroller.
Pixel Chunk side scroller. Get it now. It's great.
You'll love it.
You'll love it.
Or you can also get involved in the Facebook Pixel Junk Monsters social.
Yep. Oh, and anyone can experience
Pixel
that.
Junk Facebook coming soon.
Yeah,
right?
No.
Confirmed.
No.
And continuing, thanks to James Stevenson from right here in Southern California, Insomniac Games.
Guys, it's a pleasure as always to join you.
Awesome.
And, you know, there's some awesome buy two, get one free video game deals going on
out there.
So you can buy Resistance 3 and Ratchet & Clank all for one, and then you can pick a third game for free. It's perfect.
I like
that. You can let them have whatever they want for that third game.
Right. We're helping you get a free game if you buy our two games. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Right, if you're not sticking around for the quick hit football after the end, thanks very much for joining us. This is Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost. The same line too. You get my voice heard over these airwaves. All I gotta do is get me some airplay. Show you that I love you, show you that I care, show you that I listen, show you that I'm here. I sold you all of that, I sold you everything. I gave my all to y'all, following those are 3 rings. You know more about me, anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. Everything I ever wanted, everything I ever needed, but I'm still struggling, still competing for your love, your heart. And you, always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start, I'll do anything for you. All right, so Jeff really has to hurry, so we'll just roll right into these. I was 0-3 last week. Obviously, I'm having the worst football season ever.
And Iowa State creamed his Texas Tech Red Raiders.
Garnet, you suck.
It's all disaster. It's all disaster for me in football this week, or this season. So here's the games we're going to do. We're going to do Jets, Buffalo, Giants, New England, and Baltimore, Pittsburgh.
And I have a college one to add to the end, too.
All right, so first of all, we have the New York Jets, J-E-T-S, Jets.
Boy, I don't know what to make of the Jets this year.
Going into Buffalo, getting 2 points on the road, but you got to wonder if the Jets can score enough to get up there.
Yeah, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid on Buffalo. I think that they showed me something last week, and I'm going to take them and give the points.
Let's break out some Buffalo wings. Yeah.
Let's break out some Buffalo wings.
She's doing her heckling thing.
That's a good first heckle.
I think you have to make all your picks in puns.
I like the Jets cornerbacks to slow down the Buffalo offense a little bit, but they know that their tight end's working. I'm going to go with Buffalo also.
I'm going to take the Jets. I think they're going to show up this week, maybe. I hope.
And Ariel's, she's got Buffalo for the wings. I think Buffalo for the wings.
Mm-mm. Finger looking good.
Buffalo for Brooklyn. And Del Rio has... He's going Jets with a flyby from the tower. Next up, we have the New York Giants, who rallied late last week. They're getting 8.5 points on the road in New England. Man. I don't think that New England, look, the Cowboys almost put a number on them. New England's, the Giants.
Yeah, they're that bad.
Yeah. And look what happened.
Don't call me unpatriotic.
Exactly.
But I think that's a giant amount of points.
It's ginormous.
I'm taking the Giants.
I'm taking the Giants, too, and hoping for a big game from Victor Cruz. Where are you going?
I think it's a trap line. I think they're trying to get people to take the Giants.
Okay.
And I think New England's going to show up big this week and make a statement game after not looking so good recently. So, nice. New England
for the Patriots. For
bold pick.
Ariel,
like
do you have a pun here?
I'm out of puns.
You're out of puns? Do you want to be...
You got to give me something better to work with.
Patriotic or Giants?
I'm ginormously behind the Giants.
Awesome. There you go. That's, what are you guys thinking there? Giants? Dave, you're slowing us down. He's going with the New England Patriots. All right. And then finally, in a grudge match from the first week of the season, we have the Baltimore Ravens on the road getting 3 points going into New Three Rivers. Is it New Three Rivers? It's not Three Rivers. It's New Three Rivers because they built a new stadium.
Heinz Field.
That's what it is. Yes. No longer Three Rivers.
Heinz grudge. Field. Finish him.
To take on the Steelers. James Stevenson. Who are you taking here?
Flacco can't be this bad, can he?
Like, yes, he can.
He's my fantasy quarterback.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Dreamy.
Like, he's just been rough the last few weeks.
She's good.
Where was that the whole podcast? No, oh, my good. God. He's my fantasy.
You know, I actually started Tebow last week because of
I'm even more sorry.
T-Bone?
T-Bone.
You got T-boned? Okay.
James just did the Tebow pose.
I mean, I gotta think Flacco's gonna come up with a game sooner or later, right? Like, I'll take the points. I don't like this pick that much, but he can't be that bad, really. Baltimore was like so good. What happened?
Mm-hmm. Well, what happened indeed? I'll do my third pick as Gene Shalit. Continue to do that. I've been raving about Baltimore. But I think the Pittsburgh will be stealing this one.
Pickle up that shallot and I'll eat it whole.
Wow.
I'll take the Steelers.
I don't think I've ever seen Garnet this red before. Well, at least not with a lot of alcohol in him, but...
Pittsburgh.
And Brooklyn, who are you taking?
She's Baltimore plus forgotten. 3 versus the Steelers.
Steelers. She's taking the Steelers. And Del Rio?
Wow, Del Rio and I are together on this one. So I'm going to take over for a second here with the college football update because Garnett can't talk.
Probably for the best.
Gigantic game Saturday night, 5 o'clock Pacific, CBS.
Number one versus number two.
Number one, Louisiana State, plus 4 on the road at number 2, Alabama. Big SEC team. Some people are calling this the de facto national championship game because
right.
they expect the team that wins this game to go on and win the national championship. Garnet Lee.
I don't know college football this year, but I hate picking against the Tigers, so I'm going LSU.
LSU plus 4.
I'm going Bama.
Bama.
Taking the points.
At the points.
Cook me up some beignet because I'm going to Louisiana.
Taking LSU. I also like Alabama at home on this. I think they just have too much talent on defense. They're very similar teams. You never know, though, with the Mad Hatter on the other sideline. Brooklyn? Should take the LSU and the points. And Del Rio? Del Rio with Alabama. Okay, thank you for letting me interject college
nice.
Football.
Nice. Way to class up this joint.
I know.
Well done. All right, folks, we will see you next week. Thanks for staying with us. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 85,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.